All right. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Technocrat Live. I'm Matt Newhall, and we are having a panel today. Who are you people? Oh, wait. No, I know who you are. You are Steve May.
No, I'm not. Don't worry about it.
Walden Leverage, Lee Wilbur, and Raris Kachova.
Lies! Oh, lies.
So, Lee is an admin, an engineer, a programmer, and a consultant. Steve is a musician, student, entrepreneur, and media personality. Raris is a physician. And Walden is a business owner, cigar aficionado, and a computer technocrat. Very good. So, we have lots of great questions, but I'm going to leave you guys swinging in the wind because I'm going to do some news. All right, so we got some news. I don't know if anybody's heard, but this came out today. Supreme Court of the United States just ruled on the legality of unconscious blood draws to check to do a tox screen, specifically for alcohol, but I'm sure this is going to apply to any kind of bloodborne chemical that alters your behavior. So I'm not sure how I feel about this. I'm pretty sure it's bad. I'm also pretty sure we're going to be stuck with it for the duration of our lives. The idea is if you're unconscious, the Supreme Court has ruled that you can, a police officer can use some approved device to run your blood and do a scan to see what you're on.
The key thing there was warrantless blood draws.
Warrantly, right. So
without
in the past,
a warrant.
So some states were doing it without a warrant. Some states were assuming that you needed a warrant, and now the Supreme Court has weighed in and said you do not need a warrant to do this. Huge change. So if you're on board with privacy rights, I'm kind of torn on this one. I actually think this is a problem. Because to me, the only place where privacy was possible was on private property. If your body is in private property, I don't know what is. Does anybody have any opinions on this or thoughts? Or anyone want to chime in on this?
I haven't read the decision, but this comes down on specifically driving and DUI. So there's
yeah, but you know it'll be extrapolated.
But there, at the moment, there's an implied consent when you got your license that you consented to them drawing the blood. I still think it's a crappy decision, but I don't know that we're going to see it go to they can walk onto your property and draw your blood because you're sleeping on the front lawn.
Can they knock you out and
well,
then draw your blood?
Well, that's exactly where the of course, you know, it's the internet, right? So the comments immediately went to
frying pan!
This is my warrant. This is my nightstick. So, yeah, I mean, you know, the only tool you have is a hammer. Everything looks like a nail. So I think there will be police who are attempting to do that. Yeah, I'm not thrilled about it. Pass.
Well,
anyway. it's 50, 40, 60, so close to 50-50, you too close to call, so.
Is it a good decision? Why are you 50-50 and not
Well, on the one hand, if I hopped in a two-ton missile, I did a bunch of damage, possibly hurt a bunch of people, possibly killed a bunch of people, I'm so out of control, I knocked myself unconscious. The police want to know, why did that happen? So that's the upside. The downside is, the police run you into a barrier, hit you with their nightstick, draw your blood, and say, we don't know, he was unconscious when we found him. And, you know, nobody's the wiser.
Body cams.
But there's
hopefully.
So if you were conscious, you feel that they should either have a warrant or your permission?
I think so.
So the fact that you're unable to give your permission obviates the need for the warrant?
There's
a presumption that you would have allowed this?
Like I said, the harm and the way... I like what Lee said, is that if you have cameras on it, you know what's happening, you can see, you can go back and revisit the video and see exactly what happened. Mm-hmm. You know, whenever you have rights like the Fourth Amendment, it's about protecting you when government goes wild, right? So the potential for government to go wild here is there, and I see the destructive power. On the other hand, you have to weigh it against, you know, I also think machine guns should be illegal, like full-on machine guns. Not talking about anything less than that.
I disagree, but
really?
Yeah, I really think that, anything that can shoot hundreds of bullets a minute is, a weapon of war. I recognize the slippery slope, and I'm actually pro-Second Amendment, so I'm a against a lot of things, but I get, especially in the context, they just shouldn't have had past prohibition, right? That's why the machine gun came into use, right? Because then you had mafias, and the mafias, you know, created this underground network, and they needed their own enforcement, so that's why they started bringing in heavy weapons and force multipliers like a machine gun, which is more of a force multiplier than, say, a handgun or a rifle. But, you know, it's kind of the same thing. Rights are to protect you from government gone wild. Can government go wild and abuse this? Absolutely, so I'm against it. On the other hand, you know, MAD was good year one. I'm not sure it's good in 2019. It may have gone too far.
So
literally nobody parties anymore.
This probably doesn't work for some reason. Maybe you can give some insight. But the compromise that would seem to make sense, yeah, draw the blood. You can't test it without permission.
Well, here's the thing. If they are already unconscious and they're brought into the hospital, they're going to do a tox screen anyway. Mm. Why does a police officer have to draw blood?
Well, and in this case, that's actually how it happened. But, of course, this opens the gate up for, you know, a licensed procedure and someone who could just, you know, use a device and go, you know, a tricorder and go...
Bloop. Why? But I don't understand, like, why, when they're going to do the tox screen anyway, the person's in the hospital, they're not going anywhere... We're running the tox screen.
Mm-hmm.
You have access. Get a warrant for the medical records. They're not going anywhere.
So you're,
why
you're,
does a
you're,
police officer have to be involved? I don't understand. The physician.
Oh, well, it doesn't have to be a police officer. Like I said, in this case, it wasn't. It was just they wanted to be able to. The argument that they put in front of the Supreme Court was destruction of evidence. You know, because of course your liver will just process it, and eventually there won't be any alcohol left in the blood. So was he
but
drunk or not?
Blood gets drawn not by a police officer, by a medical person.
Right, I was using that example.
The police officer has to be there for chain of custody.
The case was
chain
using the medical records from the hospital. I'm extrapolating it.
Okay.
So eventually this is going to be a device. You know, clearly, now that the Supreme Court has green-lighted this, there's going to be a device that's carried around in cop cars that can do the same thing. Which, you know...
Why does it have to? I don't understand the. I don't watch news, so I don't understand the.
Well, it doesn't really matter where the blood is drawn. I mean, I was just using that to say that instead of blood being drawn as a decision made by doctors to say, okay, this person's in peril, we need to know what's going on. It's going to be the blood is drawn by the potential for blood to be drawn by a law enforcement agent. Because, this is part of an investigation, we don't want evidence destroyed, because that was part of the ruling. That's the part that bugs me, that it's about evidence not being destroyed.
There were some weird things in the ruling, and like I said, I haven't read it in detail. But
I only read
summary,
snippets.
But there was also
this literally broke 2 hours of the show, people.
Yeah,
I'm not lazy.
I know the dissent, part of the dissent.
All right, I am lazy, but
this isn't even the question that we were presented.
Right, right.
You know, the question that came to SCOTUS wasn't even kind of what they ruled on.
Right.
So it's a very bizarre... thing all the way around.
Oh, this is such a good panel.
Well,
thanks, guys, for coming.
See,
I appreciate it.
Well, see, that's what kind of bothers me. You know, I understand what Mark is saying about the chain of custody,
mm-hmm.
because even when we do urine testing for, like, Department of Traffic, employment, it's a special seal that goes on. The person has to urinate with the door cracked open. So there is a chain of custody. I just don't see...
Mm-hmm. And that can be...
The cop could stand there, but, you know, the person's unconscious. The test is being done anyway. I don't see where the debate is.
All right. I'm totally going to humble brag here. I am such a huge nerd. I actually ran the numbers on the odds of a chain of custody being interrupted by a car crash if a cop was carrying a particular piece of evidence in their car. Like, I ran the numbers for national car crashes and what the odds of being in a car crash on any particular day. And actually... by the way, encryption is safer than physical evidence, even if the chain of custody is completely uninterrupted and totally trustworthy. But yeah, I mean, it happens. It happens all the time. You know, evidence can be the bag just has to pop open. That's it. It's over. You know, I mean, that doesn't mean they're not going to seal it, pretend like it didn't happen. But
I think the problem here is with lawyers, because some lawyers are going to stand there like, how do we know that the blood draw that was done? I don't know why I sound like Matlock, but you know, I don't know the blood draw.
No. I'll
wasn't confused with bed number 8. Was the nurse? They were having an affair with the doctor in room 12. Can you deny that? It's like, what? I think the whole problem stems from lawyers,
right,
causing problems. The person comes unconscious. We do a tox screen. It's part of the medical records. We base our decisions on this.
Right.
It's
but you're not there to bust them. You're there to save them.
Right. Well, they have the medical records. The tox screen came back. Oh, look, he has ecstasy and coke and, you know, he has this and he has alcohol. Yeah, he was partying, you know.
Yeah.
Why do you need a cop involved besides okay, well, one blood draw, you took it to the lab, very good. Like, he's not going to sit there with pipettes and stuff. You
right,
know?
Right, right, right. Well, you know, I mean, really, like, three quarters of this question is, were you okay with people refusing breathalyzers in the first place? Because this is basically, that's completely revoked now. Now, if they can do an unconscious, essentially, the Supreme Court has ruled that no, we get to measure how much drugs.
What if you're semi-conscious?
There's a difference because my understanding, again, I am not a lawyer in any stretch of the imagination. My understanding on the breathalyzer refusal was you could refuse.
Mm-hmm.
In which case, you could have your license revoked for refusing.
Right. And not in every state, but most states.
Right, right. But the knowledge you gain, the government couldn't gain any knowledge from a forced breathalyzer.
Right.
They could punish you for not doing the breathalyzer. I might need one. But they couldn't gain the knowledge. Now the argument goes, but now we can gain the knowledge.
Yeah.
You know, so now it's a question of, okay, we can take the blood draw. Oh, we also see you had pot. Well, your security clearance just got wiped. We also see you had, you know, so what are you going to do with the knowledge that you're gaining?
Nice.
Here's the thing. The knowledge has to be put in context to whether or not the chemicals were causing altered mental status at the time. Pot can stay in the system for a few days. If I smoke a joint and I get pulled over 3 days later...
And it does on the driving side. It doesn't if the issue is a security clearance and a federal requirement that you not have pot, period.
Right.
Then as soon as they see it, your security clearance is toast. Doesn't matter if it was, you know, being used to disclose information or anything. So now you're in a position where you couldn't. And yes, the other side of you goes, well, don't do something you're not supposed to do, but that's the global argument against the need for warrants in general. But that's not the system we live in.
A state trooper said it very nicely to me. If someone's not operating a motor vehicle safely, they don't, look, for the most part, I don't think that cops and state troopers care if people drink or smoke pot and drive. Mm-hmm. They don't care at the end.
Yeah, they do.
They said
bunch
very
of busy
nicely,
bodies.
They said very nicely, one state trooper said, if they're operating a motor vehicle unsafely, I'm going to pull them over.
Right.
If they smell like pot, I'm testing it for pot. If they smell like alcohol, I'm testing for alcohol.
Yep.
So they don't care about if someone has a drink and drives. They care about unsafe operation.
Yeah. Well, now we're getting back to my point, which is that those laws aren't really there for the good cop, the good situation, where everyone's doing their part for society. Those laws are there for where the system goes haywire, you know, either through a political process or through somebody being a bad actor.
Yeah, I mean, I would count. There are bad everybody's in the world. Are there bad?
For sure.
I think that's a very
as a matter of science, there are bad everybody's. Yes.
Portion.
1-3% psychopaths. That's the percentage of the population. You can argue about whether it's one or three, but it's somewhere in there.
That's general population. Doesn't mean that even applies to specific areas.
They love power, so they're attracted to power. So now, I will say, there's probably less psychopaths in the police forces more recently because they've been cracking down. They've been putting more rules in. There's cameras. There's more ways to go wrong. Mm-hmm. So it's actually less. They have less power than they ever had. So it's a less attractive job. But, yeah. For sure.
Was there any truth to that rumor that New York City had a maximum IQ for police officers?
What?
I assume not.
I swear I heard it.
You heard it here first, people. What?
This was like 5 years ago. They were declining.
That can't possibly be real.
Yeah, I do remember another event.
This was an actual thing?
Yeah. I don't know that there was truth to it, but I remember the...
Do you know what the ballpark number was? It struck me like, seriously? If you're too smart, you can't be a cop?
It's a variation on overqualified.
Matt has left the building. I don't know, man. I didn't hear that. I can't verify it.
It was years ago. It's not something they just said on the news like last night.
No, I believe you. Lee, I've always known you to be sincere. If you're saying this, you think it possibly at least somebody told you it was true.
It was at least a rumor at some point not too, too long ago.
Right, yeah. Yeah, it's weird. No, the best I can do is that I know they test for mental illness for cops, for New York City cops, and for Nassau County cops. So because I've heard about the processes.
Oh, yeah, because those tests you sure can't study or...
Yeah. Well, it's the usual, you know, the jails are full of psychopaths, but generally it's the lower half of the IQ curve also because, you know, not to say there aren't smart people in jail, you know, but...
they weren't smart enough.
Dude, where are you going? He left. We're going to be down to zero people.
No, it's fine. I'm kidding, man.
It's just stick.
You know, now that you mention it.
It was the first question. We can just move on.
All right.
So anyway, I don't know. I mean, it doesn't sound like a definitive answer. I wasn't even planning on hitting you guys with this, but
yeah, you mentioned just doing news, but I kind of just
No. It's good. I like it though. It's good. If you have something to say about the news, and I hope if future guests, if you're watching this, you know, jump in. If I'm talking news and something that's interesting to you. So this one's going to be a little more controversial. So Project Veritas released some video.
Sorry.
Both anonymous video. And Steve jumps back into the frame.
I'm sorry, something came up.
So some video. No, it's fine.
I'm still here.
Anonymous video and also some sting video. So the person didn't know they were being recorded. Of employees of Google who confirmed that the algorithm... ML Fairness, which is actually a known Google algorithm, they've talked about it at length, it's in their docs, is actually a politically slanted algorithm, which is targeting certain kinds of politics and not other certain kinds of politics. I don't even, of course, you know, you have to be living under a rock to know that it wasn't the conservatives that said that people weren't playing fair with them, but I don't really care about that for this. I care about whether you have something the size of Google. Can it slant politics and tilt the field towards one party or the other, towards right or left, towards populist?
They engineer it completely.
They didn't used to, for sure. I mean,
no, they did. They didn't. But they're building platforms like what we're using, where they can entirely just engineer all that. You know?
Yeah. Well, So it's a little disturbing because it's been casually denied in the past. Also, what's disturbing, there's two things also that are disturbing about this. One is the press isn't picking it up, the mainstream press.
Mm-hmm.
But there's plenty of confirmation out there. It happened. And the other one is that the video got like 1 million hits, and then YouTube took it down.
Who owns YouTube?
Yeah, that would be Alphabet.
Well, YouTube's been doing like sketchy things all over the place recently, too, though.
So, I mean, you know, I don't really care about which politics it is. It just bothers me that this could happen. I'm kind of ashamed that we haven't been targeted here on the Technocrat Live because we're criticizing the technocrats. We're actually criticizing the process where a technical person who's at the top. You know, we're all technocrats. Technocrat isn't necessarily a bad thing, but how you use it, you know, if you use it to be a steward of other people and you do it poorly, messing with a political process is not good.
Look at Stephen Crowder. Oh, sorry. No. Stephen Crowder, he's a Republican YouTube personality.
Right.
He got his channel deleted based on, like, some edgy humor.
Right.
But if technocrats were on that level of popularity, yeah, there'd be issues taken upon that. It's just that it's not like people aren't like focusing all their energy into that. They're focusing on things that kind of more make them feel better and more comfortable.
All I've got is a hammer, so everything looks like a nail.
Yeah.
Technocrats have the ability to change the algorithms, but they can't get out there and say their own piece. They can't make their arguments as eloquently.
And YouTube has like their algorithms
too.
That's
a shame, you know. But hopefully we can help change that.
But YouTube, what they do though is they, for every video, they give it a rating behind the scenes. So you can basically get like shadow banned on YouTube because. If you have profanity or such in your video, you can be like rated M or you can be rated T or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And based on that is who your audience will see your content.
Mm-hmm.
So you couldn't just not be pushed because of just stuff that you don't have any control of.
Okay.
You got to ride the wave.
Yeah. I totally didn't see that argument coming. Good thinking, Steve. Do you have something else you want to add?
Yeah, I have a question.
By the way, I just want to say before I don't want to cut
please,
you
no,
off.
Please go ahead.
I want to put this out there. Just
yeah.
So I have some left views. I have some right views. I work really hard to stay independent. I mean, of course, I have opinions. I'm not like a robot or something. But if you try to drag me to the left, I'm going to fight. If you try to drag me to the right, I'm going to fight. So fair warning. All right, go for it, man.
Well, first, I would just like to come out and say that I never voted in my life.
Yeah.
Nobody has motivated me to actually get up and vote.
Mm-hmm.
I'm kind of a troglodyte, and you know, with respect to this panel, with their ability to... You know,
I don't know what that word means. Troglodyte?
Troglodyte, cave person.
Like a caveman.
Compared to you guys in the sense of technology.
Oh, that's
so
awesome.
So I'm not really...
You need a fancier word than I know to say that I'm fancier than you. Freaking rock and roll, man.
Exactly. So my question to you is, why is something like Google... It's like we're having a conversation about a private company as if though they're supposed to be this high ethical standard, independent... kind of not taking sides.
At one time,
like neutrality.
At one time, their slogan was "Do no evil," right?
Yes.
What's evil about having an opinion?
Quietly.
Exactly.
Well, so, I know where you're coming from.
It's not evil to have an opinion.
Right. No, it's not, and it's not even evil for a company to have an opinion. The problem is, you've got. And I've got like this 95-5 fight in my brain. 95% of me says Facebook and Google and YouTube, even though they're Google, whatever, can do whatever the fuck they want because they're a private company.
Yeah.
The problem is...
Oh, by the way, we curse you if you haven't figured it out.
Yeah.
That's fine. Continue.
Enter the MA YouTube section.
They've also become... Hey, I just got you an M rating on YouTube. They've become the town square.
Yes.
Facebook has become the de facto town square.
Right. Full of mobs Google, and shouting and throwing rocks.
But the problem is the town square is protected. The whole idea of the first is that you should be able to get up and shout in the town square whatever lunatic, fringe, dumbass idea you want to espouse. You're protected from the government stopping you.
Yeah.
Not from Google, not from Facebook, not from YouTube.
Or your employer.
Or your employer. But if these platforms have become the town square, that's where that 5% of my brain goes.
You know, the 5% of your brain is telling you something important. So the real thing here is I think that the big media companies, and this is something that's reflected in a bill that just came up, which I mentioned last episode, but it's just a bill right now that's on the floor. They haven't actually – I don't even think they brought it – it's not even possible to bring it to vote yet. So
the
it's a
schoolhouse rock thing, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I just don't.
Sitting on the steps of Capitol Hill.
Everyone, come on.
I'm being intentionally vague. So, but I think the limit was for 300 million global users and 100 million American users and like 300 million. $300 million globally revenue and then 50 million and 100 million. There were some limits as to what defined a big tech company. So that's it. And the idea was to require them to choose one. And when I say choose one, I'm talking about are they the soapbox or are they the lunatic on it? And you can't be both.
Well,
you're editorializing.
Right.
You're not both.
They've been given some latitude as a platform, not a producer.
Right. That's
where
it.
They're
that's
not. They don't have liability for some of the content on the platform.
Right.
Because they're a platform.
Right.
But once they start editorializing, now they become a producer.
Right.
And now the argument is they should lose that, and this has got a double-edged sword, but the argument is they should lose that free pass for being a platform.
Right.
But if you're going to take it away, now they're scared about the content.
Right.
Because now they can't say, oh, no, we're a platform, it's not our fault, because now you can go after them.
Mm-hmm.
So I understand why they want to take that away.
Right.
But if it... They need to be a platform because it's the network effect.
I sympathize with that they're upset, and I realize that they openly – it's not like they hide that they lean towards one direction politically. I mean, it's got to be horrible to be sitting in the driver's seat of a car while it mows down school children, you know, because I'm sure that's how they see it, right? But at the same time, it was never the driver's seat. Right.
Where do you get your analogy? Holy shit.
Don't worry.
Analogy.
Wow. I think that's there's a store two blocks down.
No. So actually, it wasn't.
A couple bottles right there.
Let me actually clarify that.
I assume that's a self-driving car reference.
This is a self-driving car reference. And the reason I brought that is because it's actually the same problem in a way, right? Oh, we wrote the algorithms, but we're not responsible for them. You know, the self-driving car companies want to be, you have to put one finger on the wheel because then legally Tesla or GM or whoever isn't responsible, you know. So that's what YouTube is. Yeah, sorry, I could have skipped the school children part. I could have made it nuns or something. But
Was like driving or
no, just walking around.
And, and does it have to be a finger?
Do you call a group of nuns a flock? I'm not sure. Anyway, so
jeez.
You put.
I was gonna say Jesus. That's not the right response to that.
The only thing if that happens, the only thing you can yell is Jesus, you know.
Oh boy.
But if you have to put one finger on the wheel to show that you're responsible, but you're not really. I mean, you're either engaged, looking around, watching, you know, at two hands of the wheel in this position, or
You're not. You're in someone else's. You got one finger on the wheel.
You're in someone else's playground.
Weight on Amazon. You got tighter on the wheel, so it'll leave you alone.
The shake weight while driving.
You're doing porn. You know, shake like, weight while driving.
Like you're in someone else's playground, using someone else's toys, trying to get benefits to yourself.
Your account inside the van while it's driving you home. Yeah.
The technology companies also have a problem that we're looking at it sitting in arguably one of the freest countries in the world.
Right.
You know, with all these amendments, and we can argue about how the first protects this and the second protects that, and blah blah. That same technology company has to play in France and in Italy. And I'm not
Agreed.
Saying these aren't free countries, but they all have different legal derivations, different
Agreed.
Push down. Even in the UK, very different fundamental law set than we have here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and they've got that platform has to react to the laws as they exist in each of these countries.
Economy of scale, including in legal proceedings, is the best argument for globalism, by far. It is the main and primary and best argument for globalism.
Well, but you still have individual...
And a global set of rules for everybody
to simplify things. No, thank you.
No, I agree.
The cost is too high. Today, reading GDPR amendments, I do not want globalism.
What?
No, it's like no one's talking about the individual person becoming this part of this mob and not thinking for themselves. It's like,
Agreed.
Well, Google has this opinion, and it's going to... Like, what happens to just thinking for yourself, getting some facts? Like, who cares what Google thinks? Who cares what the New York Times thinks? Like, let's think as individual people.
I completely agree with him. I'm just going to go along with whatever he says.
Well, I would mind if Google was out there saying, this is what we think.
That's right.
The problem is when they start shutting
down... Flying someone else's flag. That's the problem.
...the platform somewhere else. When they start saying, this is what we think, and we're not going to show you a conflicting opinion. That's when it becomes a problem.
So, but
it's still a private company, and that's there's still 95% of it. They can do whatever the fuck they want.
You know, but
it's Google, it's Facebook, it's where you're going to go. What, are you going to go to the library and look it up on the Dewey Decimal System?
Yes.
I mean, good luck. Encyclopedia Britannica hasn't been updated
people,
in a while.
Because people are fucking lazy nowadays. That's the whole.
That's partly good coders are lazy. This is part of the technocracy.
Good coders are lazy.
Right. Okay. Technocracy rewards laziness. You want to automate everything, and because if you don't, at some point you fall behind, and things start spiraling, and you get out of control. And like, I still do my checkbook by hand. It's a nightmare. It's a total nightmare.
But yeah.
I still balance my checkbook by hand, and you know it costs me time. I mean, if it's a problem, I like using the mail because I know there's legal protections with it, but it's not free. It's costing me a lot of time. Some people just use their bank to do auto pay and everything, and it just keeps track of it for them, and they don't have to do anything. So I'm at a disadvantage, you know, and so things like that as they add up over time. Eventually, you get to the point where you can't even compete anymore, and you're on the outside looking in. So yeah, absolutely, the technocracy reinforces laziness. People are lazy because they have to be.
They don't know. Well, you know what? I've come to a conclusion that, laziness could be passive or laziness could be active.
Mm-hmm.
So people who can't wait online or people who are impatient, it's a type of laziness
mm-hmm.
because they can't exercise self-control.
Yeah.
You know, so if someone really lives their life in this way where they have to get their information from this source and they will just glue to that source and doesn't know how to do research or look into things for themselves,
mm-hmm.
they just become part of this like little, you know, these little sheep just jumping around.
Yeah, I am. I mean, so there's some of that for sure. There's definitely people who are just, they're not making an effort. They don't have the tools. They just, you know, they're about as smart as wet paint drying. You know.
Have you guys heard of snow plowing? Not the actual car with the, you know, not the snow to the side.
Tell me about this alien technology.
I'm
what are you talking about?
I'm not sure I want to know.
Yeah, thank you.
I'm going to make a
mistake. No,
I'd also like to point out we're not
ex
here.
I'm a little worried about what definition he's going to provide.
If Paul had asked me that question, I would not answer. But.
Don't worry. It's not like docking. Don't worry. This is a little different. Okay. So snow plowing
Yikes.
Is when parents show up with their kids for job interviews. And mom sits there and fills out their job application, and the parents call up the boss and say, my child's been working for 10 years, and they need a raise because of XYZ. this really irks me, and I think this kind of ties into this whole where we are with technology, getting information, being lazy.
I have heard of this. That's what I said. That that's what it was called. Yes.
Snowplow.
Yeah.
Not that.
Wow.
That would.
I'm always learning.
And that applicant would not.
You, you can't ever know that.
Oh yeah. Crazy. Yeah. They could be the best employee in the world. If their parent calls me, I'll be like, Bob, you do a great job. We love you here, but you're fired. Yeah. Your mom just called. I'm sorry. We got to let you go. We're not compatible.
Yeah. It's a good shtick in movies, but not so much in real life.
Mm-hmm. No, so this ties it. I think we, the whole society, we have this systemic illness happening
mm-hmm.
where we as individuals are not being motivated. We're sort of being funneled into this mass thinking,
mm-hmm.
Kind of like gun control.
Yeah.
Well, everyone's like, you know.
The funneling is being done to protect us.
Right, to protect us.
And that's one of the worst reasons, that's one of the worst answers. That, and this is where globalism is not a good thing, because mm-hmm. this is where our, and I think we had this conversation when I was on last time, this is one of the fundamental differences of our entire rights system in this country versus others, that we don't get our rights from the government.
So wait, check this out. I'm going to tie this right back into democracy. So, you know, the in my opinion, a rough consensus, you know, a roughly positive consensus, in other words, a majority, but barely, mm-hmm. is worth 1,000 times a quorum that's forced from up high, you know. And that's the premise of democracy itself. So
I don't think so.
I think so. I think it's that people, even if they don't necessarily, if they can't logically articulate the problems, that they are capable. And I'm not saying that democracy is foolproof, and I'm not saying it can't be corrupt, and I'm not saying a society can't degrade over time. These are all problems. See, my view is the government can go and just explode.
Like that.
Like that.
Exactly like that.
Just like that.
Just like that.
Right? Totally innocent. Nobody even thinks they're doing it. They think they're helping. They go to reach for the glass and they knock it over. Right?
Or you just completely break it altogether.
But right. I think it's more of a corruption of the English language. Democracy is just a system of voting people into office.
Right, right. I'm also referring to republics. I did this. I mentioned that too on your show, and you were like, democracy? I'm talking about republics too, and including
mm-hmm.
that.
Yeah, no, I didn't ask.
Yeah.
No, but the English language is an interesting point, because if we can't even agree on what a freaking word means, how are we supposed to have a conversation?
Yeah.
How are we supposed to discuss
something? And
that is, the devil is in the details. We agree on 99.9% of the stuff. It's that 0.01% that we're trying to discuss with words that we can't even agree on the meaning. So that's a very...
I think it's even more scary than that.
And pushing ahead, and also we get this situation where we get vapor lock, and we just can't even describe something because there's no word for it.
I think it's even more, it's more darker than that, that 0.01% versus 99%. I think in that 99% chunk, I think maybe like 99% of that 99% chunk, we're having a conversation, we're both using a word, and that word means something different to each of us, but we assume it means the same thing in our conversation to the other person. Mm-hmm. We assume when we have these talks that we're all on the same page.
Well, but I like to think, and I could certainly be wrong, but that we forget how much we do all agree on certain things. And I don't mean the things that we're sitting around going, no, we don't agree, because I think the things where we at all think we disagree are much smaller, because we don't talk about the things that we all agree about. But I think we all agree that I probably shouldn't be stabbed when I walk out the door later, or, you know, I shouldn't have to worry about, you know, it's things that are so obvious that we don't think about them. We all agree on these things.
Right, but it's the same thing.
We agree there shouldn't be.
Well, this is something we started talking about.
Walking down the street tomorrow, shooting other people.
This is something we've been talking about on your show. You know, like with my suggestions, we really should. This is one of the reasons it's important to sunset laws. Not necessarily because we don't agree that murder is bad, but because it's good if once in a while we re-examine murder and remember why it's bad. We're only talking about the stuff at the periphery. We're talking about the stuff right at the edge of the debate, and we're not talking about the stuff underneath the foundations.
Right.
And that's important to making decisions.
You know, and unfortunately, people are busy. They don't have time to explore it, so everyone just constantly looks at that periphery and they don't look at the underlying fundamentals.
That's where the disagreement is. It's only fun to have a conversation about stuff you disagree about. Otherwise, you're just kind of...
Right, you know. But I think the danger is when we agree...
Well, I mean, the purge would be fun.
I think the danger is when we agree, but we have different concepts in our head.
Yeah.
We all agree that cup is green because we've been taught that it's green, but I don't know if... We don't know if we see the same color.
Yeah, I forgot which philosopher touched upon that.
You dig what I'm saying?
Yeah, how do I know that if I could have your eyes or your brain or whichever part you want to interpret as interpreting color... I might look through your eyes and say that's red.
Right, exactly. Because
even though it's green, exactly. We both would agree it's green.
Yeah.
But my idea of green and your idea of green are very different green.
Exactly.
I mean, if you go down that road, there's also the perception, like among the same thing, where the glass doesn't even have a color, and our perceptions just give it a color based on lighting or whatever. Like same
we're
thing.
Just lumping it into a pile of things with colors.
Yeah.
It's easier for us to deal with it.
Yeah, there's a study done regarding a brown table, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like. There's a concept behind it that like maybe like a man in the machine, aka God, gave us like the perspective that this table is brown. Other things saying we don't know what brown is. What if it's this lighting? What if the lights are off over a different situation? We don't truly know what it is. That kind of also factors into it.
Mm.
You don't know what perspective is coming from that too.
Yeah, yeah. All right.
Perception is reality.
Well, that's it.
Right there. Around, guys. Around. I think nice. We just lit the intellectual script.
Okay. Apparently, Lee is the guru on the hill. if you can take that a shtick and just give us a one-liner at the end of every debate, it'd be perfect.
just to put a bow on this, yeah, the First Amendment is the freedom of speech. But it's not coincidental. The Second Amendment is the right to bear arms. So if you don't like what the first person says.
George Carlin has several good bits on that, by the way.
In the case of all of the amendments, none of them give us a right.
Well, the rights
there are no rights.
The rights come from God, according to the Constitution. That's the legal foundation of them.
You can't name me one human right. Name me one human right.
Yes, I can.
Go, name me one.
Okay. So I think we have a right to property. And this is based on the stuff that I did with CivGene. And the reason I think that we have a right to property is because it's animals just display behavioral characteristics of territory. And actually, human beings retain the knowledge of territory over an extended period of time, which is something that's not present in any other animal. So I think that that behavioral differentiation...
That's not right.
Sure, why not?
That's not right. Human rights do not exist by definition.
Well,
they cannot exist.
It's a new thing. I would understand why you were skeptical on it. But
yeah.
I think it's true.
Oh, so when a government decides to build a highway and demolish someone's house, where does that person's right go?
Well, so you have...
Domain, yeah.
Yeah, of course. You know. But
so we agree that their right could be revoked.
Well, this is the problem of the tragedy of the commons, right? So we have the tragedy of the commons where... you know, we have a resource that's limited, and of course, the tragedy of the commons is just going to become more and more prevalent as time goes on, and as resources become scarce and need to be shared more often. So, if you can't share resources, at some point, you're essentially sentencing the people who start off at a lower point in the totem pole or have a starting line further back to agony or death. Right, because they can't share in the resources. You know, like overfishing the ocean is the easiest example. But eminent domain is another case of that too. I mean, roads benefit everybody. Everybody ends up having lower prices on all their goods because of roads.
It's not right.
The question is, well, I mean, do you have a right to exist?
No.
Interesting.
Well, I don't have a right to exist.
Actually, based on my argument, actually, you wouldn't because animals, you know, exist. They don't do anything special to exist. They just existed one day and they stop existing one day.
I don't have a right to exist. I could exist to the best of my abilities.
Right.
But it's not an inherent right. We don't have rights.
No,
there's no such thing as rights.
This is going back to the definition of terms again, right? But I think you could say you have rights that society can revoke. We can put somebody in jail. We can...
Then it's not a right.
Commit somebody to death.
We're talking human rights. I mean, I'm going
so
basic
right, you
human
are
rights.
So
legal rights. I'm talking human rights.
Truly, truly inalienable right. There
Correct.
Is no way to alienate it.
Correct.
Not through court. Not
nope.
through. No.
Doesn't exist.
What?
Does not exist.
I can walk over and kill you right now.
Yes, you can.
That please don't. Right. Come on, people.
Oh, come on.
Wait really, till the end, the and then we'll have a full show, and then right. There's fireworks at the
but
end.
But I'm just saying, we
but
just
that doesn't
the
mean
rights
you
don't
therefore
exist.
Throw the framework of rights out.
I don't
you,
really
you have to take that step back and go, well, okay.
It's,
but within
it's
the framework that we still have to kind of all agree that we're going to abide by some
that's
laws.
Fine. That's a nice, pleasant fiction that we could all agree to, but it's not human rights. I think we should get the definitions clear. There's no such thing as human rights, period.
Fine.
They don't exist. We could agree to be nice to each other. We agree that if you kill someone, you go to jail. We agree we shouldn't drink and drive. We agree to this. We agree to that. We enforce these laws, but they're
right.
not rights.
Allow me to be pragmatist. So yeah. I have to sit down and I will work on a written eminent domain argument, counter argument for you, but I can't
Please.
Do it now because
no,
it's
going
to be
okay.
It's a complicated topic. There's a lot of little details. There's a lot of little winding paths we can go down.
Yeah.
But
then
I'd like to get to item number 3.
Got it. Have we gotten to 2 yet?
Yeah, no, this is
yeah,
2. We finished
2.
Right,
2. Okay. Right.
And the funny thing is, these are just the news items. The questions are way deeper. So. This is going to be interesting. Well, this one's all right. Let's go to news, and then we'll. I'll skip what I was going to say because I want to. It's not my show. It's your show. So I want you guys to have a chance.
We know.
We're
taking it over. Don't worry.
Yeah. No.
We've commandeered the exact platform.
I don't have any rights. So. So Bitcoin.
You have plenty of rights. I just think they don't exist.
That's. And we're probably going to come back to this a little bit, but it's actually a question where it will naturally lead back to the same discussion. So, Bitcoin is almost hit $14,000.
$13,818.26.
What is it right now?
Hold on.
Oh, it's back up again.
No, it was at $13,818.26 at its peak.
That's a peak. So
and
a lot of people.
Right now, it is at $11,367.
So a lot of people were wondering why that happened, like why all of a sudden is this happening?
Facebook.
No, I don't think so.
Facebook coin.
Yeah, I don't think
it generates hype. Any hype in like the crypto space is like directly affects
Bitcoin. That's the common knowledge that people are saying that it's a Facebook coin, but the Facebook coin is just really a gift card. Like talking about it from a technical standpoint, understanding you know money supplies and deflation and how the technicals that they released. Of course, we don't know everything because it's Facebook's thing. Right, they're being very technocratic about it. It's our thing. Blah, blah, blah. It's a gift card. That's what the Facebook money is going to be, which means it's valuable in Facebook properties, and that's it. It's a company store. It's just a company store all over again. So, yes, of course, markets can move on that,
mm-hmm.
and you'd be right, but that doesn't mean that it was an informed decision. What I've heard, and it seems credible to me, is it was actually a short squeeze. So a bunch of people were short Bitcoin in the 8,000, 9,000 range, and they got jacked. They basically had to cover their shorts, and it created this run, which kind of makes sense with how the chart looks. But that's very interesting because you don't hear about too many short squeezes in markets these days. Do with that what you will. Does anybody else have any theories other than Facebook and a short squeeze on why that happened? Anyone want to chime in? Okay. You can always chime in later.
That was the fastest question.
Yeah, it was. It was.
Unless you want to take time.
Well, you know what? You're just like, you're neck deep in Bitcoin, mm-hmm. or you're like, what? And so I've been both. So.
Yeah.
Unless you want to explain to a troglodyte what Bitcoin is. If you have time for that, you can explain it, because I don't.
I can give it a minute. What do you guys think? Give it a minute? Sure.
Okay.
So Bitcoin is it's essentially a precious number hidden in a secret ledger. So, yeah. So what you're doing is
pretend I'm 5 years old, please.
Which
is kind of close to my emotional age.
Do you know what asymmetry means, right? Where you have something where it's so the two sides are not equal, right? That's essentially what. So in algorithms, asymmetry usually means not always, but usually means CPU load. And what it means is you have a heavy CPU load on one side and a light CPU load on the other side. So this is used all the time in media and compression algorithms. So if you want a video to be able to play on any old junk hardware, you may spend extra CPU compiling the video so that it plays very easily. But it's also very small, so it uses very little bandwidth. You know, it's kind of like a choose two out of three kind of scenario. So that asymmetry is used in conjunction with a peer-to-peer network to generate bitcoins,
right? A peer-to-peer network works. Where
so
everyone
topic number four is.
All right, wait a minute. I think you're still way. Too,
yeah, you need to bring it down a few notches.
Like,
okay.
When you say explain Bitcoin, you mean
like
what is Bitcoin?
What is
it? It's, all right.
Okay.
We come way out.
All right.
Why don't we give this a stab?
Let's dial it back a bunch. In essence, it's a because I'm not in it, so let me take a swipe at this.
Sure. And that perfect. Thank you.
It's a currency like pound, like lira, like dollar, like whatever.
Okay.
In essence, except it's not governmentally driven. It is driven by a bunch of people that say, look, I've got 5 Bitcoin. How much do you want to pay me for a Bitcoin? And the next guy goes, oh, that sounds like a good idea. How about I pay you 8 Bitcoin? Now, the problem is, where do these Bitcoins come from? I mean, in theory, we know we went off the gold standard a billion years ago, but let's say the dollar was based on gold and the pound was based on sterling, et cetera. The reason you can't just run around and open up your wallet and stick free Bitcoins in it and then go buy stuff with them is to get a Bitcoin or a fraction thereof, you either have to buy it from somebody.
Well, one Bitcoin is mined at a time, but
Or
most people trade in fractions now.
Okay, I didn't realize you mined them one at a time.
Yeah.
Or you mine it, which the act of mining it, it's a good analogy. You know, if you want gold, go dig a hole, and occasionally you'll find...
You throw money in a hole until you get gold out of it.
Right, but you'll find some gold, but it takes a lot of work, and then you get something valuable. You can basically run a computer program that occasionally will spit you back a Bitcoin based on a whole lot of computational math and a shared ledger that makes sure people aren't faking.
Basically, your computer solves math problems to give you Bitcoin. That's kind of how, very basically,
remember when you solve math problems and your teacher gave you a star?
Yeah.
It's the same thing except the computer's solving them now.
Yeah.
And you get the star.
And that's why the industry, when you're buying graphics cards and stuff, it was like all jacked up. People were buying them in bulk because
still
that
is.
Could give them.
Still is.
Is it? But it's not as bad as it was.
It's like them.
Yeah, well, when we're at the, it'll probably be bad again. We're at the peak.
No, the Bitcoin miners are using their own. It's not. There's not a nefarious kind of. There might be as well, but I mean, some of the Bitcoin mining. When we talk about a Bitcoin mining facility, we don't mean, you know, a room or a couple computers. We're talking about data center size warehouses that are just mining Bitcoin.
And there's a fixed amount of Bitcoin out there. That's like what kind of runs the entire market. It's like. Kind of like how our currency is backed by gold. Bitcoin is more along the lines of like it's in an international currency. There's no like tax on trading with it. Now you have all the governments trying to make laws against it. Like New York is pretty strict.
Yeah.
But with
the strictest probably.
Yeah, but with Bitcoin, the reason why it has that value is because when all of them are mined, they're all mined. That's it. There's not going to be more made or anything. There's a fixed amount that can be in circulation and more are being added every day.
That's pretty cool. That's pretty trippy.
Yeah.
It's like very that. Trippy.
That's really
it is. It is not just trippy. In my opinion, the reason I invested in it is, and people argue with me, this is the answer to several problems. We just replaced other monies.
Nice.
You
had no
taxes. Now, I will say, I will say that if there's no internet, there's no Bitcoin, for sure. You know. So,
and also, if you forget,
you know,
if you lose your flash drive, you don't have it either.
Gold in your pocket when all the electricity's off.
Aside from Bitcoin, there's like dozens and dozens and dozens of other coin.
There's thousands.
Litecoin, Ethereum.
There were thousands 2 years ago.
Yeah.
There's tens of thousands now.
Yeah,
and they all have varying prices.
But then you have a coin called Ripple, which is kind of which is established in the UK, and that's meant to kind of circumvent banks. Even though it was kind of, I believe it was created by a bank, if any of you could say.
Yes, it is a banking consortium.
Exactly.
Yes.
So, but what a lot of people do also is they mine what's called altcoins, which are coins alternative to Bitcoin, and then they convert it over to Bitcoin, which is a more efficient process.
Just to put things in perspective, in the early days of Bitcoin, knowing how open source worked was really useful. It's still useful now, but it was extra useful back then. You know, like, not talking about how the code works, how the society works, because people were starting, basically what people did is, because it's under the GPL, Bitcoin, they would just literally take the Bitcoin code, copy it, change the name and the port, and, I have another coin. And that's actually how Litecoin got started. That was like one of the first ones. So I don't know if it might have been the first one. I'm not sure about that. But
I mean, all of these have value only to the degree that somebody is willing to trade something else of value for it.
So
no different than any other currency.
Right.
In essence.
Okay.
So here's the secret is that's the thing about all money, All money is equal. The real conclusion that I came to from all this is not that Bitcoin is like, oh, well, it's not backed by it, it doesn't mean anything. I actually came to realize that, oh, none of it means anything.
Well, but all currency is backed by whether or not other people are willing to give you something in exchange for it.
Mm.
Everyone will do that for the U.S. dollar forever. Everyone will do that for the pound sterling forever. Everyone will do that for the lira forever.
Mm-hmm.
The problem with Bitcoin is there are tens of thousands of them. Not Bitcoins, but tens of thousands of
cryptocurrencies.
Cryptocurrencies.
Right.
So in an attempt to protect us, there's the government's problem. Oh, you might invest in this and piss away your life savings and then nobody
has
Bitcoin anymore.
Yeah, and in fairness, some of those altcoins, man, they are freaking shady, you know.
Just because
Bitcoin has all the code out there and the entire blockchain is there, and you can use tools to look at every single bit of the blockchain.
Which is the part I don't get about all the intraceability of Bitcoin and its anonymousness.
Yeah.
It's all in the blockchain.
I pay my taxes. They're going to get caught. It's just a matter of processing power. Anonymity is a strategy, and it's a temporary strategy at best. They're going to get caught.
Yeah, but how does anyone claim this is more anonymous than a suitcase full of 20s?
It's not. Actually, a suitcase full of 20s is more
significantly
anonymous. Unless the government's onto you and they're marked, you know, and they see or sequential.
Yeah,
you know,
but that
movie
that,
stuff.
That presumes precognition.
Why are you giving me the nod writers for sequential marked bills? Never mind, it's awesome. Let's leave the mysterious.
Check the serial
numbers.
Do they have serial numbers?
I don't know, but they're already off Amazon.
They do not have serial numbers.
Yes.
But what you're saying with like shady coins, like for example, look at Dogecoin, right?
Yeah.
Like Dogecoin, it tripled in value like since it like was kind of conceived, but like you have it sponsoring NASCAR. Like they legitimately bought like ad space on NASCAR vehicles and put a picture of Doge, the Shiba Inu dog, on the car.
Hey, well, I put $10 into it. I figure, what the hell?
Same, I tripled mine.
If you coins out there want to sponsor a physician, you could contact me on the link below. Okay.
Just get a giant Bitcoin logo tattooed on your neck.
The first Bitcoin transaction.
I have a Bitcoin address on my site.
The first Bitcoin transaction.
Yeah.
10,000
Bitcoins for pizza.
Right.
One pizza, 10,000 Bitcoins. If that pizza guy had a lot of those Bitcoins, he would be like Warren Buffett.
Right? Over $1 billion.
Yeah.
Well, that price, the $11,000, that's per Bitcoin.
Yeah.
Wow.
But most people have pieces.
You got to understand.
Most expensive pizza you'll ever order.
When my wife and I went scuba diving in the Caribbean, we met someone.
Laugh with me.
we met someone whose job was, I wake up in the morning, I set the interest rate for my country, and I asked him, please explain to me what money is, because I don't get it. And he couldn't explain it to the degree where I understand. I still don't understand what money is, where it comes from. So Bitcoin, dollar, sterling, whatever. Someone with a machine cranks things out.
I love your why questions. They're spectacular. And there's actually an answer. My superpower is answering rhetorical questions, by the way. And the answer is, it comes from human behavior. It's another one of those human behaviors. Oh, currency is a human behavior that's not shared in the animal kingdom. So that's something that we do that animals don't.
No. Wait.
They don't trade currency. What?
Animal kingdom has currency.
The animal kingdom does not have currency as we know it.
No, but they know how to exchange products for services.
Yeah, you guys had that whole bit on your show about it, didn't you?
The monkeys and quarters? Capuchin monkeys?
Yeah.
Yeah, the monkey prostitution?
Yeah.
Well, first of all, any example where animals have to be taught how to do something by humans is out. Because humans taught them how to do that. That wasn't the animals that really originated. There's all these videos that, I love it, every once in a while somebody will send me a picture of a dolphin and a dog or a deer and a moose.
There's
always people
out there,
involved.
Somebody sends me that picture, I don't love it. So.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's cute, but I mean, I'm like, obviously the person put them up to it, right? You know, because that's what happens. Now, occasionally, you'll have cases where animals will emulate a behavior that they have, that they show for their family to other animals, incidentally, but I haven't been convinced. I haven't seen the smoking gun. Probably the best case I've seen is of an orca. Of a whale saving a seal from an orca. That was probably the best animal altruism case I've seen because there was really no indication there was any human interference whatsoever.
That's as good as it gets.
When the video was over, did the whale eat the seal?
I don't know. Who knows what happened when the video shut off, right? So, yeah. Well, whales have they can only have the fuzzy teeth that eat krill. I forget the name of them are, but yeah. So. Anyway, I have a lot of things to send you.
You can go look up fuzzyteeth.com.
I'm not just riffing and being crazy on this. I actually, the thing is, I've written up stuff on it, but the problem is it was over the course of 10 years, at least 12 articles a year for a decade. So we're talking about hundreds of articles, and I just don't remember all the details.
And search never
actually,
works.
I would actually pay admission to spend a day in your brain.
I spend admission to not do that. That sounds like that sounds horrific. Imagine being trapped
in
the
topic number four. So this is actually an old one. I just wanted to bring it up because it's an oldie but a goodie. It's actually a news item from 2 years ago, 2017. Diebold exposed USB ports were actually could be used to throw a USB stick in. If you took a USB stick and you wrote the right code and you put it on the USB stick and you plug it into an exposed USB stick, exposed USB port on the ATM machine, it would literally dump all of its cash onto the floor. So it was a good example of just a massive security flaw. With and I just wanted to bring it up, kind of use it as an archetype because we might need it later. But if anybody had anything to say about that, probably not, right?
Yeah, damn it! I should have gone into programming. That's what I'm saying.
This is it. You know what? I mean,
it's okay. I'm not in it either, so we're good. We're in the same boat together.
Code is leverage, and all you have to do is, you know, if you give me a place to stand, I can move the earth. And that was Archimedes that said that. So, yeah, sorry, my brain again. I'm exposing it to my brain.
That's a really interesting quote.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, man.
Archimedes
said, I feel like I'm on tails.
If you gave me a place to stand, I could move the earth. Yep. If he had, in other words, he
really
just needs
a lever.
He's strong enough to move anything if you just give him a place to stand.
That's deep, man.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. It is.
That's like bong deep.
I hope I haven't ruined anyone's day with that quote. So I just want to say I'm actually going to be on Tales from the Bottom of the Ocean, which is a philosophy podcast with Austin and Mike on the 3rd. On this channel, on Area 22. So tune back in on the 3rd, and I'll be here at 6, I think it is.
6 o'clock on Wednesdays, yeah.
6 o'clock on Wednesdays. Thanks a lot. Lee and I have just begun a project, and it's worth mentioning. Normally, I don't like to announce things when we don't have any kind of URL or any place to send anyone, but it's great news, and I'm really excited. I love the Icon Science Fiction Festival. And it's a local science fiction festival that's been here a lot longer than most of the other cons that people know about. And we're actually going to start a show called the Unconventional Show for Icon. So
they haven't been to Icon before.
Start with. Well, Icon's been out of service for a few years.
Yeah, no. When I was in high school, there was this anime club, and they used to go to the Javits Center for Icon.
Yeah. Right. So that's
It's still early in development, but we hope to kick something off soon.
Right. So we're working on it. No promises for anything, but this is really great. I'm really excited about this.
It's nice to be trying to do something again.
I want to see science fiction flourish on the island, and there's lots of other things, panels, LARPing, gaming, all kinds of things that Icon did, and this is kind of a way to bridge that meet space world and the virtual world so that people can stay in touch with Icon and see what's happening while in between events. So
may I make a comment about Icon?
Sure.
So, like I said, I'm not too deep into things. However, I sat on a panel Icon, and I really, it has science fiction, but it has a lot of people who are, they have a lot of scientists.
And fantasy, too.
Excuse me?
And fantasy, too.
A lot of fantasies. I saw some of those costumes, yeah.
Yeah.
but the thing is I got my wife one too. nice. But the thing is, it's like, you know what, it really, I encourage all people who consider them scientists, even myself as a physician scientist, people who are into physics, to really go because it really sparks the imagination. I think Icon's a wonderful thing to keep the brain alive and keep the brain healthy. It's not just for, because some people look at it as, oh, a bunch of people dressing up or a bunch of, you know, people, you know, some science fiction geeks and stuff like that. I don't think so. I think it's a lot deeper than that. The speakers are very intelligent. There's a lot of great guest speakers, scientists. What was the name of the gentleman that we drove? I drove from the airport.
Mark Millis, I think. Yeah, worked for NASA.
Yeah, yeah. So there's a lot of scientific brains that actually participate in this. So anyone who has an interest in science, I highly recommend ICON, just to keep that spark, that love of science alive, that we had when we were students and before we got jaded. I think I'm going too deep into my own personal thing right now. I'm gonna withdraw for a second.
No, that's cool. That was
It was very good.
Yeah. Well, no. I mean, so I just want to reemphasize what Rara said, and I agree with you. I actually was like, a bunch of nerds dressing up like weirdos and, you know, running around going,
it's a Muppet show. I didn't say that.
Right? No, I totally said that. Well, I have a nerd show. How much nerdier can I get? I'm part of ICON. I'm like uber nerd. I'm an ultimate technocrat here. So, yeah, I mean, I was just like, because I did the same thing with Bitcoin, too. I'm like, it's nerd money. I don't care, you know. And, yeah, when I actually started coming, I wrote a sci-fi book, and I went and I did a couple of writer's tracks, and I went in some science tracks to talk about nanotech and computers, and, man, I was just like, what a phenomenal group of people. I am super lucky to be part of this. So, yeah, you're dead bang on.
I've been working with ICON for almost 20 years, and to me, it's the science, the technology, the fantasy, the science fiction, it's all very inspirational to see what people come up with and where they take it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The costumes are phenomenal, and also I miss the dealer's floor too. I bought quite a few good T-shirts there, like yours, Geeks Rule.
It's actually a Microsoft shirt, but yeah.
All right, that's fine. So, you know, you're not going to stand up and start yelling developers,
you
are you?
You couldn't just plug ICON, could you? You have to plug Microsoft.
He's the one who commented on the shirt.
It's a great shirt.
Microsoft sucks.
Still. Microsoft's the good guy these days.
Yeah.
Yeah, they really are. Some of the other companies have been behaving so badly.
Like Google.
Thank you. Thank
Google
you.
Sucks.
I didn't want to say it, but yeah, thanks.
That's why I'm with him.
You know, they just were so pure and good. The white screen, the letters.
You know what I love about you guys? Your industry is just so pure. Because if I was able to speak about my industry the way you guys speak, I would be jobless tomorrow. You know, I cover myself a lot.
Yeah, the truth is, a lot of people, and this is an important point, and this is an important point for the show. You know, a lot of people in our industry will not speak about how our industry is.
Really?
You know, you guys are being very brave, being out here, and like I'm taking a huge risk by having the show, because every show there's a chance I could say something that could damn my career.
So, not going to name names, in part because I don't remember names very well. Anyway, but the number of people I've talked to at conferences and meetings who relay stories about how horribly insecure their networks are in places like healthcare, finance. You realize that Citibank, if you have a Citibank account and you use online banking, their password is not case sensitive.
Mm-hmm.
The password isn't case
sensitive. The password is not case sensitive.
Because I always like cutting my possible choices in half.
Yeah.
When I'm trying to set up cryptographic hardware.
You know, it's like my Burger King account is case sensitive.
It's weird to think that we're in an era where our Facebook account is more secure than our bank account.
Yeah.
But Citibank sucks all around.
I thought you weren't naming names.
I'll name them.
Nice.
Hey, yeah, I'm a big fan of.
They haven't even drank yet, people. Wait till I get them drinking. Everybody have a drink. I want to keep this going.
I got coffee.
I tweet regularly when people just do stupid stuff.
So I mean, to be truthful, I'm hoping to walk the line on this show between people ruining themselves and getting the truth out there, and everybody really, you know. But yeah, I mean, our industry can be very.
And I'm just hitting both sides of the wall back and forth just frequently.
I have no doubt that Citibank will never call me for a job,
right?
So
we wouldn't need this. okay. Thank you.
Steve's just a racquetball.
Not for you.
No, you got your
exactly.
Okay, so he wants to see. Raris is trying to see if he can get me totally.
I don't want to be a princess, but next time I want a biohazard monk. I think it's.
I'll work on it. All right, so actually, this is perfect. So I don't know if you guys segued on purpose. Oh, there it is again.
Segway!
Isaac.
Woot woot.
Oh, by the way, I got to give credit to Isaac for that unconventional show name. That was really brilliant. So we had a good runner-up, but that was the best one. So what is the worst office prank that you guys will admit to?
I can't think of an office prank that I even did.
Yeah, I'm really actually a pretty...
I can think of several that we wanted to do. I'm trying to think of
one. I mean, I've known, like, for, like, for example, there's...
If you wanted, like, the worst... You could make it the worst office prank you didn't do.
Well, we're in, like, an office... Like, I guess the worst thing I've ever done is, like, I went into someone's office and they had, like, pictures of, like, penises, like, that they hid for their coworkers. And I kind of and I just added more, I guess. I guess it's, like, the worst I could ever say I did. It's not even a prank. I don't know, because I just
kind of...
I go to my office.
I think you're helping, but
work.
I'm not sure with what.
Like dildos?
You know, they draw pictures of it, and then they on, like, post-its, and then they hide it, like, around, like, for the other people to find.
Oh, I
went around and did, like, kind of one
of...
Yeah.
Really I just imagine someone opened the door, like, a dildo and a string.
It looks like a car.
So the answer for TTP... For the Technocrat Live, that's time to penis, is episode 16. We now have a penis drawn on the show.
It's not erasing.
No, get up.
History has been made.
Guys.
The first penis.
Hi, my name is Steven. You're watching the Technocrat.
All right, you can sign the vagina now.
He's already erased it. Oh, I love this.
We reached that M rating on YouTube.
Draw the vagina.
All right, so we've got extra fine Waldo penis drawing. What else have we got? Any other office pranks? I know you got something good, man. You can see this.
I know.
Don't ruin your life, but you know, if you can think of something, that won't.
I remember what I did to a student, to an assistant, a student I let do something. You know, when you give vaccines, you have to ask any allergies, and egg allergies are a big no-no for some vaccines.
Mm-hmm.
And the person had an egg allergy, and they came in for a PPD reading, you know, they put a little bubble under the arm to look for tuberculosis.
Okay.
Nothing to do with allergies, but the patient left, and I went, and I screamed at her. I'm like, you gave someone a PPD without telling them, without asking about their egg allergy? And it was more like a test of their knowledge.
Right, right.
So she had this look of horror. She went very pale. And then she, color came back to her face and she said, you're an asshole. But I don't know if that's
nice.
A prank. But,
competence and professionalism.
Yes.
I think the worst thing I did, because I'm just sitting there thinking about it, I used to work at a Halloween store, and at the Halloween store, we had we worked at one that was like a high theft
at your
one.
Office, that counts.
A high what?
A high theft store.
High
like
theft store?
Theft, yeah. Like people would come in, they would take costumes, stick it in their baby carriage with no baby in it, and then walk out with it.
Did you guys frisk
Halloween.
People with
did they
Halloween?
The baby hung where the costume
did you guys frisk all the sexy nurses leaving? Like, hey, I think you're stealing a costume.
No, like what me and my friend used to do is we got really bored one day when we were doing inventory. So it was like one of those pop up kind of stores. Mm-hmm. So we hid behind like the walls there where they put the hooks in, so they had the holes in. And I remember we used to just like freak out everyone who we saw trying to steal or something like that, and just like pop out at them out of nowhere. But that's like
really?
Yeah.
That's great. I think I've been in a store like that, and that happened to my kids, and they loved it. They thought it was the most awesome thing.
Well, also my friend was like the full out like goth attire, like the tattoos and the makeup and the long hair and everything.
Oh, okay.
So like,
he didn't have to put a costume on.
He didn't.
He looked the part right away.
But no, I just
office.
What? Go ahead, say it.
Just throw it out there, man.
Oh, no. Oh, no. Oh, no.
Oh, these guys are their inside jokes.
Just don't name names. Just too late. Oh, no.
Yeah, hey, look, if it's going to get someone in trouble,
so,
I don't know.
I wish I was actually part of this. I wasn't there. Go ahead. You got to
go ahead.
I was really more of
this was elaborate.
Ancillary character in it. I wasn't the primary instigator.
Just say, Lee.
But,
there are no human rights, remember.
Nice.
Do it.
When we were younger, one of our mutual friends was duped into believing in time travel for several months.
No. Just tell the story, man. Just tell what happened.
Okay.
Just tell it as it happened.
I feel like I've just heard three beginnings to a story. And
come on, guys. Spit it out.
Justin was sitting at home one day.
Clock's ticking. We've only got...
Justin was sitting at home one day.
Seriously, we have messed around for an hour and 20 minutes. Get it out! Come on, let's go.
Hour 10.
Yeah, exactly. Justin was sitting at home one day.
In the story.
And our friend Dave runs up to his place, and starts spouting things like, you know, this happened 25, 30 years ago. I'm trying to remember what he said, but it was something like...
he was wearing some sort of fancy Adidas outfit.
Something Justin had never seen him in before. Mm-hmm. And he starts saying things like, you know, I if somebody comes asking for me, don't do something, don't tell them I was here, or something like that. Just give him some reason to wonder what the hell's going on.
Okay.
Then Dave leaves. This is a weekend where Dave was supposed to be away with mm-hmm. his parents.
Okay.
On a trip. The last minute, it was canceled. Well, I shouldn't say that. His parents went away. Dave stayed behind.
Okay. So nobody knows this.
Nobody knows this but me.
Okay.
And Dave's girlfriend. So, Justin...
Maybe.
Dave then calls Justin a few hours later, asking him to tape a Star Trek show for him.
Right.
Because Dave forgot to set the VCR.
Okay.
And Justin's like, "What? But you're home." Like, "No, I'm upstate." Okay. So now Justin's wondering what the hell's going on. He goes down to Dave's house. He keeps looking for Dave. Dave's got this three-story house on a hillside.
Right.
And
perfect place to get murdered, I guess.
Yeah, kind of.
Yeah.
Yeah, nice.
Ideal location.
Justin's hunting around the house looking for any sign of Dave. Dave and I are holed up in his room, which is on the second floor where you can't see in. And at one point, I'm running between the two, between Justin's house and Dave, and Justin telling me, "Where's Dave? I know he's around." No, he went upstate. To make a long story short, believe me, not for me. This is short. When Dave's parents get back, he talks to his parents and gets them to agree, yes, he was with them.
Right.
So then Justin comes down. Justin asks his parents. Parents say, "Yep, he was with us." Now Justin doesn't know what to think.
Right.
And for 9 months, they kept up the act until another Dave and different, Justin.
A different person named
different
Dave?
Dave. And Justin.
Dave number two. Yeah.
We're having this little contest who could make the other believe something more ridiculous. I learned of this, and I was like, "Ooh, I know one." And we went back over to the first Dave's house, the instigator, told him what was going on. "I'll be right back." Runs up to his room, changes into the outfit. Justin is cowering in the corner. "No, no."
So you made him believe that time travel was real?
Yes.
Yes.
Wow. Did you ever tell him? Or is he going to find out?
Oh, it was that 9 months.
He found out when David came back down.
Oh, my God.
His outfit. In his, like, futuristic Back to the Future, Doc comes back with the sunglasses.
That's
kind of outfit.
Amazing.
That beats the hell out of scaring people in the Halloween store.
That was...
I know I'm not doing it justice, but it was epic.
It was so epic.
Really?
I wasn't there, and it was epic.
Nice.
Yeah.
Cool.
And then there was the one that we almost did with you the other day, but, you know.
What did you do?
Go on.
We were having a nice little parking lot track after Lilug.
Yeah.
And we got on the topic of microphones.
Which, by the way, is the inspiration for the show. Keep going. Yeah.
And so we were talking about how Isaac would be able to listen in to anything in your house.
Oh, right. Yes.
Yeah, unfortunately, Isaac was asleep, but I did text him asking him
to...
So
they texted Isaac to try to call in the show while we were doing the show, because I made a joke about how Isaac could hear anything because he's this hacker guy and he's got all these sniffers set up and all this pattern recognition set up. And then he was going to call us on the show and say, "I heard that."
Yeah.
He was going to text us on the show and say, "I heard that."
Unfortunately, Isaac didn't get the message in time.
So. Yeah, yeah. Well, that's okay. You know, you don't have to actually trick us like that. You can just be on there. In fact, if you want, leave a message in the comments. If you donate a dollar to Area 22 Productions, what is it, Patreon?
Patreon.com/Area 22.
Yeah, Patreon.com/Area 22, and you give us a dollar, I'll be more than happy to mispronounce your last name as a service for that. So.
And if you give a Bitcoin, he'll actually pronounce it right.
No. it has to be a whole Bitcoin, though. At the $18,000 spike.
I'll pronounce it wrong and right. But I'm not promising how many attempts.
So you better save yourself for like 3,000, 4,000 around there.
Yeah.
Get a second Bitcoin backed up just in case.
For a Bitcoin, I'll give it as many attempts. I'll take up the rest of the show for that. we'll Technocrat Live for Bitcoin.
An $11,000 profit for saying someone's name wrong. I mean, sounds like a good deal.
Now you get the model.
If any company other than Bitcoin wants to sponsor this show, we will use their name instead of Bitcoin.
Yeah. But
I don't own the show. I can't make that promise.
So I got another topic for you guys. So how
but
do
give
you,
us your money.
How do you fake intelligence? In other words, what is a technique that you would use to pretend that you were smarter than you are?
Confidence.
Yep.
Confidence. Okay.
That's a consulting answer.
Ha ha!
And
yes.
Laughing.
Don't you worry. We've got you. Wait a minute.
No,
laughing.
That's Eric.
You just did that. You
I know.
Laughed.
I know.
You just
it's true.
Laughing.
I know. It's part of my shtick, though. I guess I'm stuck with it. Well, anyway, and asking people to describe the thing that you didn't understand, and then repeating what they said like you knew it all along, like when you said that word before,
what?
Right? And then well,
troglodyte.
Exactly.
Troglodyte.
Yeah, that was
troglodyte.
Trilodactyl.
Trilodactyl.
Pterodactyl.
Inventing new words. Okay, so how does fake smart get caught? Right. So confidence is how fake smart is. You show someone that you're smarter than you actually are. How do you catch someone being fake smart?
By bringing me on this show.
Nice.
Can't argue with that.
Well, you can catch them, but whether they admit it or not is another story.
Well, I'm just curious about catching them. So,
but is fake smart bad? In other words, are you because there's a line between confidence and arrogance.
Well, right.
So,
touche on that one.
Yeah. That's fair, yeah.
Right.
And I think they get caught when they become arrogant.
Right.
If they're just confident.
Interesting. So you may not have control over the situation. They may have control over it.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, as a consultant, you go into places, we joke about it, but we literally will go in, talk to some people. What is it you've been telling your boss for the past 6 months? Oh, that sounds like a good idea. You go in, you'll tell the boss the same damn thing that his employee's been telling him for 6 months,
mm-hmm.
and because it came from you, who he's paying
I've been
for,
that employee. I know exactly
right.
what you're talking
yeah.
about.
But it's like, is that fake smart? I mean, you're faking it. It's you didn't know how to solve the problem. The damn employee that was sitting there knew how to solve the problem.
Right.
But if you do it in a way that's arrogant, then you kind of get called out on it. And if you do it in a way that's fake smart, you just get
I don't know if you guys are superstitious, but my left ear is ringing like crazy. Someone does not like this conversation. Continue.
Gee willikers, Batman.
Did you forget to take your earpiece out?
Oh, right.
Most of the planet who pretends
to
be smart.
Hold on, Isaac's contacting me. Okay, so when you, how about when you're creating something unattended? You know, and it doesn't matter whether it's a script or you're building a bridge or,
What do you mean you're creating it unattended?
Well, you're creating something unattended. In other words, you're creating, you're setting a server up, you're fixing a car, you're designing an airplane, whatever it is. If you're pretending to be smart, you're coming through with confidence, but maybe you're not as smart as your confidence actually reflects, and you've built something permanent that you're not going to have access to anymore. The most extreme example would be setting a satellite up into space. Right. Once that thing's in space, you can't fix it anymore. Right. It's either orbiting or flying away from the planet. It better be right. So
1 second.
No.
Fixed.
Check the Hubble.
Or fix the bowl at least. Right. Yeah. I mean, I'm not talking about a good effort and an error. I'm talking about just totally.
You're talking about a Martian lander half done in metric, half done in imperial.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's a perfect example of that. Yeah. Yes. That actually happened.
If the damn metric people had done their job and did it in imperial, it would have been a fine.
Yes.
Those
metric people in their base
system.
If we just converted to metric 30, 40 years ago when it was planned.
The really sad thing is we did.
Well,
the NIST standards are based on metric. The definition of a pound is based on.
Do you know the road sign? There's at least one road sign I know of on Long Island that points to a direction in kilometers.
Okay. Isn't it on the Southern State Parkway, or am I imagining that?
Northern State.
Northern State, okay.
The direction is 1.6 kilometers for Garden City.
That is weird Long Island trivia.
Give or take. And
by the way, just don't drive your truck here and think you can go check it out, because those roads have really low clearances.
It's unlike
the rest of the country.
I think it's Glencove Road and... I don't remember the name of the road, but it's like just north of 25B, I think.
Really?
Yeah.
That's so weird.
It's on Glen Cove Road.
In case you didn't know, there was this whole move to, I don't know if we covered this on the show or not, but there was this whole move to move the whole country to a metric system at one point. And it was prevalent in the 70s. Everything had metric and imperial on it for a while. And then we just gave up, I guess. I'm not sure what happened. But so at one point, everything had metric and imperial, and now it's just imperial again with occasional leftovers like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that was the problem. The problem was that there was trying to switch over rather than transition.
Okay.
I
think it was too harsh.
I think it was too harsh. I think it was like, oh, we have to. Who was it? Was it Roosevelt or who was it who started the whole initiative?
Well, there was a big push in the 70s, so yeah. I don't know if it was Nixon or it was Johnson or.
Around that time, they were like, we're going to change all the textbooks and make it into metric. I think it's a bad idea. I think you just have to just sort of transition.
It worked for
Microsoft. 1 mile / 1.6 kilometers.
Well, that's what's happening in cars. So cars were both for 3 decades, but now they're just metric. You know, there's a couple of exceptions on them for maybe like the really like the lug nuts or something like that. But everything else in the car is metric.
Oh,
so.
No,
I meant for general people, not for.
Oh yeah,
engineers.
No. But I'm saying what you're saying actually did work with engineers. So I suspect it would work with people. You just need to make a longer timeline.
Yeah, engineers. But what about like the kids growing up? You know.
Right. Well, I mean, I think kids can learn it. We're going to get back into kids learning and how that works in a little while.
18. Topic coming up in like 3 years.
It's coming up.
Somewhere around 4 o'clock this morning.
You do realize the office prank thing was supposed to be the icebreaker for the beginning of the show, right?
Oh.
We're halfway in the show.
Have we hit the halfway mark, really?
That was the halfway mark.
I mean, you wanted the conversation format, right?
I love it. Actually, I don't even care. We'll just do this again. You know, we can only revisit the panelists. I mean, I can trick you guys into coming back here with my overconfident laugh. Oh, by the way, there's another thing too, that being happy and confident and laughing a lot and can imply, which is that you just don't give a damn. So there's that too,
well, that's
right?
That's generally true.
Yeah. So you can either be extremely competent and feel like you're in your space, or you just don't care and you think it's all funny. So
I'm not sure those are different. I think the more competent you are, the more you don't give a damn.
Interesting. I'm glad I brought that up. Yeah, they might
be. Because you need that freedom to make a mistake. You need that freedom to. It's not that you don't care if you do a good job, but there is a freedom that not giving a damn.
I think the medical term they use for psychopaths for this is aloof, right? That you're a, you know, like when you go from confidence and you start creeping over into don't give a damn, right? So, unfortunately, it's very difficult to tell at a glance the difference between someone who's confident and someone who's aloof. That's, I think, the risk.
You still have to be flexible, though, to be willing to learn when you're wrong.
Right.
No, yeah. Wrong.
Wrong. Right.
Get it? Holy, you're so dry. Your bearings, you're a loofah sponge.
A loofah. How about when you're creating something that's unattended and that's highly leveraged? So in other words, something like, again, now it's more specific, the bridge, you know, an airport runway management system, something where there's a lot of destruction if you get it wrong, you know.
737 flight control.
So I'm just trying to figure out this.
What's
basically what I'm asking here, and maybe the wording isn't the best, but what I'm trying to figure out is here, when someone is fake smart, at what point does their destruction become so devastating that everyone's got to say the emperor has no clothes?
When Fire Festival happens.
Ah, yes, I like that. Thanks for bringing that up. Fire Festival. Do you guys know about Fire Festival?
No.
Fire Festival. Oh, do you want to do it?
Yeah, you go for it.
Is it like Burning Man?
No, it's not at all.
It was supposed
to
be.
So Fire Festival. So think about it like this, right? There's a festival on this beautiful island off the ocean.
Okay.
You get all your food catered to you. You get a villa. You get to see some of your favorite bands perform in a Coachella-like fashion. And you get it all for a weekend for a few $1,000s, right? What actually happens is...
Actually, this does ring a bell.
At the, there was a few documentaries on it. What actually happened is everyone went out to this really crappy parking lot on an island because it was the same day...
They changed islands, first of all.
They changed islands. And it was the same day as this other big event. So the other big event took priority. So they were in the parking lot section of the islands. Everyone was staying in basically like military huts, like little tents instead of villas. They the food that they were given were like little bologna sandwiches.
Sounds like a fish concert I was once at.
And like,
yeah, but the problem is this was
all the bands bailed out.
Ultimate creme de la creme of luxury.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, these are penthouse apartment type people that were going to this thing, and they showed up and they paid penthouse apartment prices, and they got bologna sandwiches and a plastic tent with crappy doors in a half built campsite.
And on top of that, they weren't even given what they were promised. Like, they were promised they'd have their own area. When they got there, everyone just grabbed a mattress and ran for it because they couldn't even finish in time.
Yeah, and everything was soaked because it had just rained the day before, and it was total. It was a nightmare.
So
sounds like you're camping.
But anyway,
there's a Netflix special on this.
And a Hulu one. But the reason why I'm bringing that up is because the guy who did that, his name is Billy McFarland. He had this other project that he did beforehand where I forgot the name. It was like this black card, right?
Oh right, yeah.
And it was this credit card type deal. And what it would do is it would be like a club where you would be able to go to exclusive events in New York City and like mingle with exclusive people. And so people would realize that, hey, you're just stealing our money kind of thing. So then this guy went again for Fyre Festival with this rapper. I think his name is J. Rule.
Mm-hmm.
And he went about it like with all this hype and everything. And then it was just kind of kept building up and building up and building up hype, hiring like the biggest marketing teams and everything on the promise of something that wouldn't happen.
And they were burning through the money so fast that by the time they actually got to the festival, they didn't have anywhere near.
Because
he didn't even use time because of poor planning.
He used the money more to fund his vacation while building the festival than actually building the festival.
Yeah, it doesn't help that when they got kicked off. Having watched it, I mean, who knows what their financials were, but they definitely should cancel the thing when they got kicked off the first time. But of course, he couldn't because he already spent some of the money.
Mm-hmm.
That's the problem with that kind of poor planning. So, yeah, okay, that's a good answer. I like that. When Fyre Festival happens, that's when you know that someone's fake smart. Any other examples like that people can think of?
Madoff?
Madoff. Perfect, yes. What right?
A perfect name for a guy that Madoff with a lot of money.
So, this is amazing to me that people don't talk about this more. To me, this is one of the signs that people are really, that our society is, that something's broken. There's something's really broken. I mean, this is a guy who was the founder of NASDAQ, all right, one of the three big stock exchanges. And he was running a Ponzi scheme. Once he left NASDAQ and went to a private company, he was running a Ponzi scheme from the start for decades. And nobody caught him until there was a major downturn and he was forced to cover. It's crazy. I mean, I don't even get it. So, Madoff, perfect example. Any other examples? Anyway, I just
Watson and Crick.
Watson.
Ooh.
Whiten words. Go ahead. No, I mean, as far as I knew, Watson and Crick were.
I'll try to talk into the microphone.
There was a huge battle going on. That there was a bunch of people. The DNA had kind of already been gelled in a bunch of different scientists' mind, but nobody was able to get the smoking gun kind of proof of it. And that I know that they also had high-end microscopes that nobody else had at the time, and that was one of the ways they were able to do it. That's all I know about the science of it. Where did I go wrong in thinking they actually discovered it?
There was, I'm sorry, they used, I don't recall her name, but someone else did the research. They published it. There was a lady scientist before.
They stole it from a lady scientist?
Yeah.
Okay, interesting.
Yeah. My uncle who died had his research stolen, and the person who stole his research actually won the Nobel Prize.
It's really
fucked up. He died. The person in his next office got it. The research he did.
That's how Iron Man 2 starts.
Yeah.
Sorry.
The person who. It's funny because the Nobel Commission is like. The person who won the Nobel Prize for his work,
right.
The Nobel Commission never said, hey, where did you get an electron microscope?
Yeah.
You know, like, he had no access to electron microscope back then. This was like 1970s.
Right.
You know, my uncle died, and this person just took the stuff from his office. And
I mean, electron microscopes are still hard to get to. I mean, there's still...
Oh, really?
Yeah, they're
you
pretty...
You can buy them off of eBay if you want.
Because they still need an isolated room. It still needs to be a building that doesn't have any sway, because otherwise they don't work.
You know, I mean, they have like a Heisenberg compensator kind of box that they use on them right now. Yes, that's actually the best description they could come up with for us. We're sitting in an IT meeting trying to figure out what was next with this thing. But, yeah, I mean, they definitely do need an isolated environment, even if the microscopes themselves are cheap. Yeah. So the whole service fee is not cheap. So, but that's interesting. You don't recall the woman's name, do you?
I do.
Didn't win the prize. Why would you?
Yeah, of course, yeah.
Okay. That's just a sad.
You get the alternative history here on the Technocrat Live. That's good. So, anyway, anybody else? Okay, so I'll cut it off there, and we'll go to the
I guess the actual content of the show.
Yeah, yeah. No, this is the content.
We on questions?
Yeah. You know what?
We're
in the questions now. So, I mean, you know, your brains are the content of the show, right? I mean, I can come up here.
Or lack thereof.
Frightening thought.
Yeah. I told you I had a brain.
I mean, I remind guests when it's one-on-one, but it's also true for the panels. You guys see me every week. Who cares what I think? It's about what you guys think. So, all right. So, what is the strangest, unexpected, unpredicted technocracy that you've ever run into? Now, you may, in case you don't know what you mean, I have an example. I realize this is kind of a tough one. What's the weirdest technocracy? Like, why are you a technocrat? I don't get it. Like, why? So technocracies can look a bit like bureaucracies, but they don't necessarily have to have any kind of formal structure. They can also be completely... So I'll give you an example. So when I was a kid, I heard so much information, and I brought this up on one of my previous shows, and I'm not going to get into the details of how it works, but I actually saw a 15-minute video on YouTube the other day that explained how the slant section 6 engine from Chrysler works and why it's different than other engines, like how it's fundamentally different. And this guy basically just sat there and figured it out. Yeah. This does sound like a stoner parking lot conversation. But actually, it turns out there is a legitimate mechanical reason why it is different than all the other engines. Nobody knew that. But everyone was like, oh, it's different. It's so much better. And no one would tell me why for 30-something years until I just came across it on YouTube. There's other mechanical tricks like this, by the way.
You've got to build bypasses.
So, to me, that is the weirdest technocracy I've ever seen in my life, where the cult of the slant 6 engine wouldn't share why the slant 6 engine was special, even though they knew it was, and maybe they didn't even know why it was, but they were right, it was special, and there was a reason why, and it had to do with the stroke to bore ratio was backwards from all the other engines. That's the big secret. So, and that made it super durable because there wasn't as much stress on the internal components, and everything was over-engineered in it, too. So a combination of two things. I just gave the whole technocracy away. It was the weirdest technocracy I ever ran into. So what is the weirdest technocracy you guys have ever run into? Something where there's this, like, this bizarre secret being kept.
Audiophiles.
Okay.
All right.
That's right.
For audiophiles, I mean, you have... Because what the nickname for audiophiles is the hobby of the rich kind of thing. Because people spend thousands and thousands of dollars on cables, on a literal power cable that they swear is so shielded where they can hear a hypothetical 0.002% increase in audio fidelity.
Mm-hmm.
There's this one guy in Japan who got a transformer outside of his house moved. He paid to get it moved. Because he claims that the electrical interference of that was making his listening experience on the speakers impure.
Wow.
There are people...
Yeah, I agree with you.
Who literally, they have audio receivers that they used for their, like, $100,000 speakers. And they put it on an IKEA cutting board for insulation, where they claim it's, like, a world of a difference. It's just, like... Very small things where there's companies that make thousands of dollars on profits on something that's kind of objective, like the kind of people who believe that one HDMI cable is better than the other if they're the same standard. Then one could be gold plated, one could be just the one you get from Walmart.
Mm-hmm.
They do the same thing equally well.
Right.
You know?
Right. You can always add up more shielding onto a cable. You can always make it thicker and heavier. You can always use better materials. You can always make sure the copper's more pure. The ends have better plating.
At the end of the day, a USB cable is a USB cable. Still a digital 0-1 signal, you know?
Right. Yeah, it's particularly that is very true. It's almost like an emperor has no clothes kind of situation. Like
yeah.
About the last question. See, this question do have kind of a thread in my crazy brain. where digital cables, the signal is coming through or it's not.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, sure, you could have a higher level of lossiness for the digital signal where it has to retransmit. But
But as long as it's under the threshold of retransmission so that you don't drop any frames, what the hell difference does it make?
Yeah, but you know, the audio file...
Within spec, it's working. It's either on or it's off, right?
Yeah, but like the audiophile industry is built on the law of diminishing returns.
Mm-hmm.
Because like, you know, you can hear an obvious difference between...
Do you think the digital world is screwing the audiophile industry?
No,
Not the audiophiles, but the audiophile industry.
No, I think the audiophiles, because they're allowing it to happen.
Okay.
So you can hear an audible difference between like $15 to $30 headphones. You can hear it if you're jumping from 30 to 70, 70 to 100. Up until after 300, it starts getting like noticeably smaller, right? But what these people do is they will spend thousands and thousands of dollars on something that their friend claims they hear a difference, where if they do blind tests, they really can't tell, you know? Like, most people can't tell the difference between CD quality audio and what you get from Spotify. But, like...
I'm thinking about macho names on yachts right now.
No, it's not a problem. It's just, like, it weirded me out because people are spending thousands and thousands of dollars when they get to the point of the minimal diminishing returns area for a maybe 1% to 2% upgrade.
I think really weird stuff is interesting.
The problem there is that they don't have the thousands and thousands. If I'm choosing to have my high-end audio cables so that my kids, you know, and my kids are eating dog food at night, then there's a problem.
No, I'm not saying...
I've actually seen that. Yeah,
but that's,
only once.
That's a problem with that person, with that environment. That mm-hmm. you can't put that on mm-hmm. you know, the audiophile or mm-hmm. whatever. Otherwise, I'm not saying it's no different than saying if I'm going to drive down the Long Island Expressway, a Buick is no worse than a Porsche, is no worse than a Ferrari, is no worse than a Rolls Royce. I'm getting
right
to exit 50 about the same time because traffic sucks. But, you know, on one I'm paying $14,000, on the other I'm paying $1.4 million. So what?
No, I'm not saying
the money to do it.
I'm not saying there's an issue. I'm just saying that's like the weirdest technocracy I've experienced, though.
Yeah.
Because. Fair. Yeah, because I'm 22, I'm an audiophile. I still buy higher end headphones, stuff like that. But when you join a group of people who all had that like mindset invested in snake oil, it's just like a weird like world to be thrusted into.
Right. So yeah, for sure, audio can be extremely complicated. Mm-hmm. But yeah, there's definitely some snake oil out there too. So does anybody else have another technocracy that they want to share?
Just want to say that you had me at stroke.
All right, nice. We like to talk about strokes and Pickle Rick here.
Pickle Rick!
I left my Pickle Rick at home. I'm sorry.
And it's a big Pickle Rick from over here.
Okay, so you guys are going to pass out. That's fine. I get it. It's okay. My feelings aren't hurt. All right. So here's going to be a controversial one, like those other ones weren't controversial. So you arrive at a new doctor. They hand you a mountain of paperwork. They refer you to another doctor. They hand you a similar mountain but of mm-hmm. paperwork. Whose fault is it you have to fill out the paperwork twice?
The politicians.
The person for not taking care of themselves.
And I use your narcissistic. I love it, dude. Never stop.
And I use politician as a slang for lawyer.
Okay. How about you? Whose fault do you think it is?
I can't even think about that because are you saying that? So
you
are you saying
to a new doctor?
I get it.
You got a mountain of paperwork.
I see it.
Fill it all out. He refers you to another doctor. You now have to fill out a very similar amount of paperwork again.
I'll give you a variation on it. You go back to the same doctor a year later, and he asks you to fill out the same damn mountain of paperwork.
Interesting. Well, that's his problem.
Right.
That's just OCD.
Stuff. Is the only thing we can do is revolution? Should we start here?
Start with the lawyers.
Yeah, lawyers.
We'll stop in the car. Lawyers. We can make torches.
is it they fill it out because they don't have the records on? They don't have the records, and you got to.
Well, that's you know, there's lots of answers. I've got
like, if I, like so, for example, if I start
between the doctors, it's so damn hard to move the records
mm-hmm.
because the HIPAA compliance issues are interpreted by so many people in so many different ways. Mm-hmm. That completely conflict with you. I'll give you a wonderful example from my own world.
I remember Raris gave a good one on his show too.
The I've got a my daughter's been to doctors for years and years and years, but presently she's going well as is everybody, but beyond the normal. And she was at Northwell, and we're trying to have a conversation, ask some questions of her neurologist, and the answers were, well, the answer's in the portal. Okay, but we can't get into the portal. Well, but the answer's in the portal.
That's okay. What the neurologist. I'm sorry. This is what the neurologist said to you.
It's coming back through the not the, that his responses were coming through the portal.
Not. He wasn't saying go search for it on the portal or anything.
Who was telling you to go on the portal?
It's coming back through his office and stuff. But he responded to our question through the portal. But regardless, what I'm getting at is, so we go, can we have a login to the portal? No, your daughter's over 13. You can't have a login to the portal. Okay. Can our daughter have a login to the portal? No, she's under 18. She's not allowed. Because this law over here says once you're past 13, you can't have it. And this law over here says until you're 18, you can't have
it. I've never heard of such a thing.
So there's a fucking five-year hole that she can't get a login.
Comedy is pain.
I've never heard such a thing.
Nigel, you're right. Yeah, comedy is pain.
That is, what did you say, Northwell?
That was Northwell.
That's just a Northwell thing that I've never heard.
No, but all of these are Northwell things because it's always about Northwell. They're all institutional things. I'm not trying to pick on Northwell. But
everybody's covered in their ass.
The law says whatever the law says, but that's always massively unclear. The question is always, how is it interpreted by risk assessment,
right,
by in-house counsel, by, and they're all, none of them are trying to do something wrong. Nobody sat around an office and said, let's make this law and screw people, you know, and no one interpreted
them. I disagree with you.
It's all CYA.
It is CYA.
No, I disagree with you.
Okay, go for it. You think they sat around and said,
absolutely,
let's screw people? I don't know.
I need some popcorn
absolutely
for this.
Absolutely. When who wins when people go to court? The lawyers.
Mm-hmm.
I have one buddy who he sued his employer for something they should get, and the money he got back was the money he owed the lawyer. The only people who win are the lawyers in this whole thing. I think it's set up this way. The laws are made by lawyers and judges. They're not made by doctors. They're made by lawyers and judges. And you know what? At the end of the day, they get to charge whatever they want.
Mm-hmm. They also come up with some really, I mean, they come up with some really wacky laws.
On purpose, I think.
Like GDPR or other things like that.
On purpose.
Yep.
I'll give you another example. I know
somebody paying the politicians to come up with these wacky laws to in turn give them more work. Is that what's really going on here?
No, I think it's just I think it's built into their lifestyle.
It's built into their DNA. Yeah, I would agree with that.
DNA, lifestyle, whatever.
So like there's literally like a bureaucrat gene and they have it and we're screwed.
Yeah, there's somewhere there's a lawyer that this made sense to. This was
of all politicians, what percentage of them are basically lawyers?
All of them. Not all of them.
Not about
like,
them.
Like they
may,
right,
they may not start out as lawyers, but they end up becoming them.
Well, no.
All but a specific bartender from Queens.
If
what do you mean?
You know,
give her time. She'll come around.
At the
past the bar as well. Yeah.
At the time they are elected, what percentage have already been admitted to the bar?
Probably very high, 70%.
Yeah, I don't know the numbers, but just from looking at some of the backgrounds from time to time, it just seems like at least 50%.
Right, but I...
Mm-hmm. That's, I was thinking more like 98%.
I don't know I'd go that high, but at least 50. Maybe 70.
But even if they're not lawyers, they have lawyers working for them.
Right, but the point is,
they advise them on everything.
If they're the representative...
Yeah.
Then they're the ones making these laws that are ultimately going to benefit all the other lawyers.
Well, but I don't even know that they're doing it
so
necessarily intentionally badly. I think it's also just partially the way they think, right? So,
yeah.
I mean, I was reading through a GDPR contract today, section 3.1. Controller shall determine the purpose and means of any contracted subprocessor's processing of processor data. I swear to God,
process that
was a sentence in a legal contract.
I'm gonna pass out.
What?
Contracted subprocessors processing of processor data.
What in the holy
fuck?
What?
Yeah, there were worse ones, but
oh my
God, that was like, you know, and I don't think somebody sat around and said, how can we write this poorly? I honestly don't think that's what happened. It makes
sense. We have the right to say names.
In their mindset.
Exactly. This is the whole point of communication. I think they think they're smart.
They've been found out.
See, I had a plan.
Oh,
I knew where you got.
That is fake smartness. There we go.
Fake smart.
That's fake smartness.
Fake smartness.
I don't even know what the hell was said, but I know it's stupid. I don't know what that
meant, but I know whatever was said was fucking
right.
Stupid.
Okay. Well, the sad thing is, if you parsed it long enough, you actually understood what they meant.
Yeah,
you
kind of
have to just
stupid.
Take parts out and replace parts with letters, and then it begins to make sense. But
all right.
The party of the first part to the party of the second part, we'll take the first part and add it to the second part.
Exactly. Yep. It was that clause, right? It was like,
if it's, so if any top cryptologists can figure out what the fuck you just said, then that's
I can
something.
Make Bitcoin with that clause, man.
It's funny.
Could be asymmetric. He might be onto something.
going back to lawyers, when I was in private practice, actually, one of my patients was actually a malpractice lawyer from the dark side.
Techno babble coin.
And she came to me one day and she goes, I was in Connecticut with all my friends and they all got bit by ticks and some of them have Lyme and I think I have Lyme because there was ticks and there were like ticks and ticks. And I just listened to her and she looks at me and I look at her and I'm like, I don't think ticks bite malpractice lawyers.
The classic joke. Why I want
to
sneak?
Oh, that's great. So all you have to do is get start a malpractice legal institution, and then you don't get bit by ticks anymore. That's correct. Or maybe never mind. No, no more lawyer jokes. Okay.
We just started. No more lawyer.
I'd like to have a lawyer on the show at some.
Yeah.
If you're a lawyer and you want to come on the show and defend yourself,
or
a politician.
God.
Yeah.
Can I make a little a segue somewhere?
Yeah, sure. Segue away.
Did you guys ever hear those douchebags, the Press Ganey people?
No.
So the Press Ganey people is an organization. I think some douchebags in college just came up with a way to make money, and they actually do statistics for how good a business works by asking customers their rating. And this has been brought into the medical world.
Right.
So on a scale of 1 to 5, they will ask something like, on a scale of 1 to 5, how likely are you to refer this provider to your friends?
Mm-hmm.
And based on this scale, companies will go down hard, hospitals will go down hard on their employees.
Mm-hmm. Is really that like strongly like perceived and like
yeah.
That's true?
It is so fucked up. And I know my daughter's going to listen to this broadcast at one point, and I'm using profanity because it's that bad. So,
that's why we have profanity here. Seriously, we're talking about the decisions that are life and death for a lot of people.
Yeah.
You
so
know.
We actually, I actually
sometimes
had,
it's appropriate.
I was working at this one place, and this guy from the main administration, who walks through the door? He comes in with his little girl, just got out of college, in her nice fancy little suit, introduces her to all the doctors there. This is the representative from Press Ganey. He might as well have brought someone into a pediatrician's office and said, this is my friend, the pedophile. You know, it was that bad.
Oh
my God, did I unload on this person. And I told her how messed up these people are. And, you know, you could go fuck yourself, Press Ganey, okay? They are so horrible because these scores are
I think we have our clip.
You have a title for the show.
They are, yes, Press Ganey, go fuck yourself.
Wiki, wiki, wiki.
They are
go
so horrible. They're not, no, I shouldn't say that. They're not horrible people. It's great when they are grading lattes and salads and sandwiches, but when you can't take something as chaotic as the medical field, chaotic in the sense of, you know, we're talking about entropy, we're talking about thousands of little factors, thousands of little cogs, and put one rating on it and then have the whole system come down on one person. There was actually a resident who the attendings had deemed basically a walking biohazard, and the attendings got together and said, we need to fire this person. This person should not be around.
Yeah, you mentioned this on your show. I remember that.
Yeah, yeah. And they would not fire this person because their scores were so high.
Right.
And I told her, I'm like, what your company is doing is destroying the fabric of medicine. It is putting people's lives in jeopardy. And she looks at me and she goes, I'm sorry this has affected your career. And I said, this has not affected my career. I have a very good job.
Typical marketing answer.
I said, this has affected them.
Marketeers are just like any other technocrats, right? They can use it for good or they can use it for evil.
Yeah, and I pointed to all the rooms where the patients were. I said, this has affected them, not me. You have put their lives in danger.
on a whole, on a global scale. You are corrupting the fabric of medicine. You are corrupting the way people work. I don't think she got it.
Wow.
I think everything should be graded on the same exact scale with the same criteria, from the quality of this paper to the quality of my healthcare.
So, you know,
really? Absolutely not.
He was being sarcastic.
Oh.
I'm going to wear my dunce cap now. Sorry.
Yikes.
I was on my forever, by the way.
I was on my soapbox. Sorry about that.
Spectacular. Please do that again. I love you, man. You're the best possible. That's great.
You're a fist bump or you're like,
yes.
So far, that's the first explosion he gave me.
Oh, man, that's great. I mean, there's the only thing better than making fun of other people is making fun of yourself, man. The self-deprecation is the key to successful faking that you're smart, is smarter than you actually are. I mean, that's just for me. That's not you.
I feel like intelligence is a lot like humor in the sense where, like, if someone calls themselves funny, they're probably not funny.
Yes, you know? I'm so funny. It was very funny. Well,
there could be a difference. Like, you could say, like, I'm a comedian, and by definition, you could be funny by that result. Just like right. if you could be working in an intelligent position, like in a programmatic field.
Tell me a joke, funny man.
Yeah. But I feel like someone who calls himself, who says, I'm intelligent. They're like, are you, though?
Yeah. Like, military intelligence. Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you can usually tell a lot of signs from, like, you know, self-deprecation, sarcasm, things like that.
Right.
People who are just—I
almost brought it up in one of the shows. I actually had the URL and I never talked about it, but there was actually a study that generally more intelligent people curse, like truck drivers, sailors.
I'm pretty sure you mentioned. I did think you mentioned that.
I did mention it. Yeah. Okay, good. So yeah, I think it's a lot of and
because I have the filthiest mouth out of anyone.
What happens when it's selective?
Right.
So there's a consultant that I know, and I do work for him from time to time. And for the most part, when I'm interacting with people, I don't use words that offend people.
Okay.
But for some reason, this guy, who doesn't use them either,
mm-hmm.
whenever I'm around him, I have this tendency to say, well, that got fucked up. That shit, don't use that.
Wow.
I just, it's like, I can't stop.
Right. Interesting.
Just around him. And not even as much around him.
Right.
He taught me half these
words.
Well,
you know me. When I don't have something holding me down, I curse like a truck driver, right? You know? But I can stop it.
You should see me when I'm mixing.
You curse around some people more.
I will say I've gotten better. I've known this guy for like 9 years now at this point, and I've gotten better with him.
Sorry, truck drivers.
But for the first 5-6 years I knew this guy, I was a truck driver with him.
Yeah.
And no one else.
Yep. Yeah, that's it. I've experienced that too, and I don't have an answer for you. Sorry, man.
But also a lot of self-deprecating and profane humor is really good as an icebreaker, and mm-hmm. I think that's why a lot of people use it too.
Right. So I think part of what's – just to go back to your earlier point, I think part of what's happening here is I think that there's a a marketing rebellion. I think people are very angry with surveys and with the attempts to manipulate people. I think that people are done with it. I see a lot of people lying to polls.
Now, please answer this poll if you think you're done with polls.
Exactly. It's like, we're going to have a poll on whether you answer polls or not anymore.
There's only 50 questions.
So originally,
come on.
I want to come up with a poll on polls.
Thing, that was the nice thing about, I think, is it the net satisfaction score?
Polish
it's,
people?
It's a single question.
Poll dancing?
Yeah.
That one I don't have a problem. That one I'll fill out. When people are doing net sat surveys, it's one freaking question. It's like rate it from 1 to 10 kind of thing.
What about you, Raris? Do you think net satisfaction surveys are better than the others?
In what sense?
They're less misleading, less destructive to the fabric of medical science.
It's not even that. I'm just saying I'm willing to fill them out.
What
you do with the result is...
I mean, right, because I think people are having a normal, healthy, and correct reaction to the overuse of marketing to manipulate people. Like, oh, okay, so we're just going to keep trying things. We have a goal. We're going to keep trying things, and then we're going to pull the results and see. Okay, they moved in this direction. That's what we want, and without having any understanding of the broader social consequences. There's no discussion with it. It's just we have a narrow target. We're just throwing it at everything and hoping to get to one endpoint.
There are two uses for marketing. One would be to manipulate people, and I think that's negative.
Oh yeah, and I don't.
But the other is to.
I don't hate all marketing. We have marketing people in the room.
The other is to simply sell your wares, right? I mean, and in that regard, to understand what the world wants, what the community wants, and market to it.
Right.
I I don't see a problem with
Well,
that.
Feedback's always good, right? It's a question of what you do with it.
No.
No?
Oh, feedback's not even always good.
No, it's not.
Shoot.
I'll give you a great example.
Okay.
Got a lot of knobs over there to control the feedback. Feedback's not always good.
Thank you. You know, no, I'll give you a great example as a
That's
physician,
true.
Right? I'll tell you exactly how the things like the Press-Ganey score have affected my behavior as a physician with certain patients. When someone would come in with a flu-like illness, regardless of when it was, but especially in the summertime, when it wasn't flu season, the standard medical question a physician should ask, have you had any new sexual contacts in the past 2 to 4 weeks?
Excuse me.
Thank you. Look at that. Look, that's exactly the whole reaction.
Yeah.
Okay. Because HIV, hepatitis, will have a viral prodrome. People will have a flu-like illness 2 to 4 weeks after being exposed to the virus. So I would ask the patients the question. I would even explain why I'm asking the question. So let's say
I didn't even know it.
Let's say, but you see, there was like a little wide-eyed offensive thing. So out of, let's say, 500 patients, 3 patients would go, oh, I had a one-night stand exactly clockwork 2 weeks ago. You should really be tested for HIV at this point. It was a one-night stand in a bar with a stranger with no condom. You should be tested.
Mm-hmm.
I had so many negative feedbacks on this Press-Ganey.
Well, fuck you for trying to save their life.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
That I was put into question for my my directors were like, do we hire a sociopath? Are you a competent physician? Why are you asking a patient about their sex life when they're coming in for the flu? In the comments would say, I came in for the flu, and I don't understand why the doctor was asking me about my sex life.
Mm-hmm.
So I stopped asking.
Right.
I
think this is happening in politics, too. I think people are lying to polls because they don't like the results when they're honest with them. So I think that's what's really happening. A lot of people are like, no, the polls are not accurate. The polls are not accurate because people have changed. This current generation of people are like, you know, when polls originally became popular in the 70s, people were disgustingly honest with them.
The problem isn't only with the poll. The problem is how... I understand what you're saying. If that hadn't been gathered, you wouldn't have been asked.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem is that what didn't happen was that when you were brought in front of a group of people, that the doctors in the room got up and said, this is the standard that we use with this question. Why is he asking it? Because that's what we fucking taught him to do in med school. This is what we were taught to do in med school.
Because that's going to save lives.
This is what you do.
That's the right thing to do.
Sorry the person was uncomfortable, but two out of 500 are now not spreading AIDS.
The person in question doesn't respect the doctor.
Yes.
Right.
Doesn't care why they're
Nobody
being
does.
Asked this.
We don't want these people to respect the authority, which is the same thing I'm saying.
But this is part of the problem. This, to me at least, from my understanding, it's part of the problem with these urgent care centers in general.
Mm-hmm.
They go to them because they want a quick treatment and then they leave. They don't want to get to know a doctor. They don't want a doctor to get to know them.
Well, I'm gonna be on their side here for a second.
Yeah,
so one of the reasons that people want a quick treatment is because it's the same thing as I was saying before. One of the reasons people appear to be lazy is because they're literally balls of the wall. They just have their head in a vice. They only got 20 minutes of free time a day, and any kind of disruption means that they're dead. They're dead. Mm-hmm. Most people have $500 worth of slack in their finances.
And because of that, they'll
be
dead.
Any disruption, they're dead. Yeah, because of that, they're dead. Literally, it's easier for them to die than to fix their life in a mildly disruptive way.
Yeah.
Financially, time-wise, because, financial and time, if you have money, you can get by more time. So it's not like they're kind of the same thing. You know, this is.
But I think if you stop going to your regular doctor and you only go to urgent care centers, then I will give you what you said. On the other hand, if you use an urgent care center as it's 8 p.m. on a Friday and I don't feel good, and my doctor I won't talk to till Monday, and I won't get to see him till a week from Thursday, then it serves
that's
a
completely
role.
Different.
And that's, I think, is perfectly acceptable.
Yeah.
If you're substituting the primary care with urgent care,
yeah,
that's a different story.
See, the problem here is that we at urgent care or primary care, we're held to the same standards of being responsible for the patient for 2.5 years in New York State after they walk out the door.
Yeah.
So someone comes in, they're a brand new stranger. I never saw the person. When I was in private practice, somebody would walk through my door. I'd be like, whoa, Bill, you look like shit, man. What happened to you? Like, I would know my patients off the bat. I know they were sick. I know, like, wow, you look great. What have you been doing? You working out? But urgent care, I don't know. I've seen people, I'm like, ma'am, I'm really concerned that you look very pale, that you might have a severe case of anemia. They're like, nope, I've been this way my whole life. My friends call me Casper. You know, so you don't know the patient. So everyone is a high-risk case because you don't know the patient. So it's like they come in with the flu. It's like, I don't know if it's the flu or it's HIV. I don't know their sexual practices. In my private practice, I knew who was married, who was faithful in the relationship. I knew who was stepping outside of the relationship. I could approach him that way. So if someone comes in who I know is faithful to their partner, and they say, oh, I have the flu, I'm not thinking HIV because I know they're faithful to their partner. But this is a stranger walking through the door with a flu-like illness. I have no idea where you've been. Maybe you just came back from, you know, some country where you just had a, you know, an orgy with a bunch of prostitutes. I don't know these people. I don't know the person walking through the door. I need more data. I don't have the data. I have to ask the questions. Right. But I stopped asking the questions. I stopped asking.
Well, if you weren't held to that, and I'm not a fan of that look back, but if you weren't held to that look back, you would at least have the freedom to say, look, I'm going to, it almost makes sense for me not to ask because I'm going to treat this as a transactional situation. Now, there's a physician's desire to heal problem with that, but at least from a transactional problem, you can treat it as, you look like you got the flu. I'm going to treat you for the flu because there's no look back.
Yeah.
The idea behind the look back is to force you to try and be a little more holistic, but it's not what happens.
I'm perfectly fine. If someone walks through the door and say, I want to be your client to treat me for my flu-like illness, that's fine. Just don't pretend there's like a doctor-patient relationship.
Because
a lawyer told me, you know, there's a doctor-patient relationship. If I ask you right now if I have a headache and you tell me to take an aspirin, you've established a doctor-patient relationship. And I told him, that is not in any basis of reality.
The company compiling those statistics has stolen the doctor-patient relationship. They have more information than you do.
No, that's I don't care.
Yeah, no, but that's, I mean, I'm saying,
fine. But
that's,
don't hold me accountable.
If we're looking
for those
at the
standards.
Whole society and we're looking at like what's wrong with the system, that's what's happened. Is literally they've stolen that relationship from you and given it to themselves, and they're abusing it.
That's perfect. You know what? It's the individual.
I don't think it's fine. I think that's the problem.
No, the problem is the individual person, the patients,
right.
The person, the clients, whatever you want to call them, their individual ability to differentiate between a doctor-patient relationship and a clientele interaction at an urgent care. You know, there is no... For someone who walks in and sees a doctor for a cough, was diagnosed with bronchitis, given some wait-and-see antibiotics, it's not fair to hold them for a 2.5-year obligation that if 2 years from now you find out you had lung cancer and go back after that doctor, why didn't you do a chest x-ray? Because a cough can come with cancer.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That's fine. It's the same thing as saying that, oh, I had a one-night stand in college with someone. We have a relationship.
It's almost like that kind of standard is almost like they're not a human being. You know, I mean, how many coughs? I mean, I must have had 50 coughs in my life. You know, what? Come on, have you guys ever been on Earth?
But that's the problem.
Much less that's the
standard. That's the standard, because if someone said urgent
like they're
care,
they're aliens.
If urgent, if they said, oh look, primary care doctor, you know the patient, you're responsible for 2.5 years, I'm like, oh, that's fine. But one person who comes in with a cough that I saw for 6 minutes, I shouldn't be held accountable for 2.5 years for their health.
So these are great answers, guys. I really appreciate this. So
and I helped.
Yeah, everybody participated. So I was really nervous because we all come from very different backgrounds, that this was going to be just all over the place, and it was just going to be all Steve or all Lee or all Walden or all Raris or all me. God help us. You know, but, you know, and it wasn't. So I'm really happy with the way you guys are playing nice with each other and supporting each other and coming up with new ideas and contributing.
I told you I could play nice with people.
Just awesome. Wait until the parking lot later.
They're going to tussle. They're going to meet at the jungle gym.
Wait until the bathroom.
Ah, rumble in the jungle
gym. Meet me at the flagpole at lunch, man.
All right. So
technology is an arms race. I'm not even going to ask it as a question. It's an arms race. Everybody's got the latest technology. Everybody's got the latest whiz-bang stuff, the latest gadgets. And you kind of – I was kind of making this point before about me suffering because I'm writing out – I'm balancing my checkbook by hand and not just doing auto-paying things. I'm at a disadvantage because I'm not participating in the arms race. Eventually, if you never participate in the arms race, it gets to a point where you're just overwhelmed and you're kind of forced into it. So, but you know, we were talking about before about time constraints and not having enough time and not having enough money to solve problems. So, I'm not even taking questions on this. I think that's just true.
I'd like to make a comment, though.
Sure.
By you balancing your checkbook, I think you are an advantage as a human being.
Yeah, I think so, too.
Because I've found myself taking out my calculator to do math that I was able to do in high school in my head.
Nice. Yeah, I can actually do better math. Because I'm the one who does the finances.
Right. So
I've actually gotten ahead of my wife. She used to be better with math than I was, and I've gotten ahead of her. Just, you know, the simple stuff, not the difficult. No one's really good at that. But
I, on the other hand, have found myself bringing up a calculator and doing 3 times 100. And then going,
that doesn't seem right.
What the fuck did I just do? It's not that I couldn't have figured it out. It just becomes so... If I need to multiply two numbers, I'm just going to break up a calculator. And then you hit the two numbers, and it would be like, well, yeah, I could have done that.
Yeah.
No, I have definitely seen a decrease in my math skills, and it's irritating.
And it'll come back if you use it, so that's good. It's like a bicycle, you know, having been in and out of it. So, you know, my attitude is just embrace the Cthulhu. I think that's most people's attitudes. You have to embrace the Cthulhu, at, you know, if you want to not fall behind in the arms race. It's this or that. It's not really a question of... you can argue about where the line is, but... So this is actually what I want to talk about. Where is the line? So my question for the group is, what is a cyborg, and how far is too far?
Are you talking about like an actual cyborg or a metaphor?
Well, so the easiest... I'll give you the easy one, because... I'm easy and simple, and that way I can look smart, and then I'll give you guys the hard question, and then you guys have to ponder the hard question. So Elon Musk said basically, you're basically a cyborg now with your phone, you know, because you can do anything. It's an enhancement to your brain. It's remembering things for you. It's doing math for you. It's communicating with people. That is the dumbest, simplest possible explanation.
That's a really bad answer.
I agree. But... at some point, we are going to start doing... I don't know if any of you guys watch Black Mirror.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, okay. So they explore this as a... I think is a literary tool. But whatever. They have little dots you can put on your head. Boom, you're in VR. And it's immersive. And you think it's reality. It's like a holodeck gumdrop
I've seen put on your forehead. Okay.
Yeah. So, sorry, I just spoiled Black Mirror and I don't have to watch it. No, I'm kidding. It's really good. You should watch it. So that's clearly a cyborg, at least while you have that thing on your head. There's an in the middle someplace. You know, is a smartwatch a cyborg, right? This is reading my vitals. You know, is that creepy? You know, how far is too far for each of you guys? And then when do you reach the point where you say, oh my God, I can't be a Borg. I'm out of here, and you go hide out in a farm.
So
I told you to come back to this.
Smart homes.
So what I would say is, if there's a cure for cancer, there is not too far.
Well, let's say the cure for cancer is before the end, and it keeps going, and you keep enhancing yourself way past the cure for... Let's assume all
diseases... Then I'll keep going.
Let's say all diseases are cured in 10 years,
Boy.
So it's just a matter of...
You're out of business.
We're out of food and air. That's the problem.
Yeah. Well, that's going to be... fucking hell of a party for 30 years.
If you're,
until then, though.
If you're sufficiently cyborg, you don't need it.
Okay.
Oh, right? So that's a very good point, you know. If you just upload your brain up into a computer and it's a perfect simulation of you, is it you?
Yes.
What if it does all the things and goes back into your brain,
what
and then
you
your body dies and it can no longer go back into your brain?
What if you copy it and you
that's
now have
mirror,
twins?
I
think that would be the answer to our problems is to exist on a virtual reality plane.
Assuming it's lower energy cost.
Assuming we're not already.
People are already bad at measuring
energy
cost.
Fibonacci spiral.
Net energy cost. So.
Well, I mean, but bring it... So.
Well, I'm talking about for you guys
anything,
personally. You
can
try to throw it on society. But
I
really
think anything that is an external tool, even if it's reading your measurements, a watch, you know, a
hat,
whatever,
a pair of underwear,
that,
a chastity belt.
That's a tool. It hasn't even
breached the surface of Cyborg yet.
Right, right.
I mean, something, I think it has
implanting
to be
an RFID
internal.
Into your wrist so that you can walk indoors.
That still, I don't think, is a Cyborg. Because
that's the first
closer.
Step.
That's
a Cyborg.
Closer? No,
cyborg.
Because it hasn't integrated to your systems. It's just, you stuck it in your pocket, but your pocket was under your skin.
Yeah, what happens if you swallow it and just rub your ass on it?
So you're saying we evolved into kangaroos at that point, essentially.
Yeah, okay. Try it.
Well, but I would say something that, you know, go back to ancient tech. Go to a pacemaker.
We've lost you.
I think ancient, and I don't mean ancient as in it's not still practical, but it's been around for 1,000 years, not literally, but a pacemaker.
Is
significantly closer to Cyborg than an RFID chip in my wrist. I mean, that thing is responsible for my heart continuing to beat if it decides to do something stupid.
Right, right.
You know,
I've seen sci-fi where they get hacked. So, you know.
But you can go on to, you know, something where it's an artificial limb. Captain Hook with a piece of lumber stuck on his foot is not a cyborg.
Mm-hmm.
But if I can attach something where I'm thinking about the fingers moving and suddenly the fingers are moving, it doesn't make it bad. I mean,
right.
But I think you're now entering that territory of cyborg. If anything, I think that's wonderful.
So right. you're thinking like the more medical sense.
I think you have to.
Yeah.
Don't forget when you get that level of neurological integration, you get the Doc Ock problem. Not to make it as dumb as possible, but the comic book. But you know, Spider-Man. Everyone knows who Doc Ock is, right? You know, where he puts the arms on and he's controlling the arms.
Yeah, the nerve transplant
Once he kills the chip that has the three laws in it or whatever it is, the arms are controlling him. Right, because it's you know, it's a two-way street.
And that's kind of where I sit on the line. If we're talking from like a non-biological perspective of it, like when I stop controlling technology and it starts controlling me, like the first example I can really think of where I kind of felt where I experienced that is actually smartphones. Where I remember when I used to buy
to see how soon before you're nervous that it took
away
your phone.
I remember back when
I'm nervous for you.
Back when I first got my smartphone, you had expandable storage.
Yeah.
You had a removable battery.
Yep.
You had an open source user interface that you can use, and just everything about it was customizable. Over time, you get the locked in glass backs. You get the locked in storage. You got to pay for upgrades, and you're certainly the phone's no longer at the whim of your needs, but you're at the whim of your phone's needs, kind of thing.
Yeah, I agree with you. That's a good example of a non-cyborg kind of power erosion happening in a technology that, if it was in your body, it would be very disturbing.
Yeah.
Any other limits? How about nanotech?
You know, there was a very...
How about a situation where you had to have nanotech because it was the only way to protect yourself against non-biological viruses? You had to have nanotech-based, you know, basically robotic immunizations.
It's just one layer of stupidity over another. You know, this whole thing, like humans just doing something stupid on top of stupid on top of stupid. It's just like, why can't people just live their lives? No, seriously, why do we have to have like artificial viruses?
And he bought the farm. So I think we found your limit.
So
no, I just don't understand, like what drives humans to do
this? Well, this is a lot of technical geeks.
How is nanotech different?
Obsessed with the latest tech.
I mean, so your example of nanotech for a virus, right?
Yeah.
How is that different than an antiviral drug? What's the difference?
I mean, you're going to have to start running Symantec on your nanotech.
Yeah, that's a certain, you don't have to pay for your immune system. That's the difference, right? Your immune system, theoretically, every time you live through something, it gets better.
But once you started taking drugs, you were cyborging your immune system anyway. Because it's a chemical drug, it's okay. But
of course.
It's a mechanical drug, it's not.
In a way, vaccines have made us cyborgs in a small way. Yes, we have artificially trained our white blood cells and our immune system to block diseases that we know about. I'm not saying it's a bad thing. So that's not my limit. Right. Some people seem to have that limit, right? Some people are the anti-vaxxers.
Yeah.
So, I'm not on board.
Oh, I just want to make a comment.
I'm like that sympathetic and just, what the? Is wrong with you people? I get it, but I don't.
Just bring back smallpox.
I just want to make a comment just to defend myself from when we were on together.
Right.
When I was on
your
show.
Sure.
One of my colleagues said that it sounded like I was an anti-vaxxer.
Yeah.
I am more pro-vaccine than the CDC is pro-vaccine.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I am not an anti-vaxxer just because I said that
wanting something to work and not suck is, doesn't make you anti-vax.
Right, exactly. So I just want to get that clear.
This is something that happens a lot in technology, where you start criticizing a technology, you say, this is a little bit broken, we should fix it, and people go, you hate technology. No, I just don't want it to suck. You know, I want it to be good. I want it. This is kind of like the open source guys got this a lot in the early days of Linux. You hate Microsoft. You hate closed source software. You hate programming. You hate computers. You're Luddites. No, we just did that particular setup didn't work for us. We wanted to try something new. And, you know, we said, yeah, I'll take my chances. And sometimes it worked and sometimes it didn't. Sometimes it was a smoldering pile of dung. You know, when you put together an open source system, it didn't work. Lots of open source software made promises and didn't even compile or run or was so buggy it crashed immediately. But sometimes it worked and solved problems. You know, this is better. That's a choice that you should be able to make when you have a technology. And so actually, something I meant to mention to you on your show, vaccineingredients.net is actually a listing of all the ingredients in all the vaccines. Mm-hmm. And I would encourage people, if you're not sure, start there. You know, it's a listing. It isn't per company. It's per vaccine type. So it may vary for company to company, but at least it's a start. And that way you can go and print it out and bring it to your doctor and say, I'm worried about this and this. And then that'll save him time. It'll save you time. And maybe you can become an
And save a life, too.
And save a life, too. Save a lot of lives if it becomes a systemic problem for a city like New York.
I'm just for the record, I'm pro-disease and pro-selection.
Yeah.
Pro natural slave.
You're the hot dog off the floor in Calcutta during a soccer riot camp.
Let's not push it.
That was. Sorry, I'm quoting Greg Garland. If you don't recognize
I'll wash
it.
Out my hot dog. Thank
so
you
wait, you're much. So you're pro vaccine, but also pro disease to help
Absolutely.
Limit population.
Absolutely.
So where's your balance there? Where's your kind of line? Good. Because it like. People who are anti-vaxxers are going to inherently die of like these diseases if things go wrong. But if you're pro-vaccine, then like, where is your kind of moral ground there?
I don't have moral grounds on this.
Okay.
There is no moral grounds. It's a matter of education, going to the library, reading, making a decision. I've seen an 8-year-old dying of meningitis.
Mm-hmm.
I know what meningitis does to little kids, so I'm not psychologically prepared to watch my child go through dying of meningitis. I'm prepared for her to go through measles, mumps, rubella, chickenpox. Is she vaccinated for these things? Yeah, she is. But I'm also psychologically prepared for her to go through these things. I'm not prepared for her to go through meningitis. I wasn't prepared to see her die of dehydration with rotavirus.
Mm-hmm.
So I do, and my lines actually pass the CDC guidelines.
Damn,
CDC,
that's good. Thank you.
So the CDC actually,
that's a good answer.
If you look on vaccine recommendations, they say measles, mumps, rubella, varicella, the chickenpox vaccine, mm-hmm. is contraindicated in pregnancy. The word contraindication for
Anybody
me.
Had a war?
The word contraindication for me is a very serious word. It means mm-hmm. under no circumstance, for whatever reason on this planet, should you give this medication to a human being. There is no benefit from it under certain circumstances,
mm-hmm.
like giving the anti-migraine medication, the sumatriptans, mm-hmm. giving it to a pregnant person. There's no reason for it. It's going to cause fetal abortions. It's going to cause fetal malformations. You don't give. There's just no reason to give it for a migraine headache. You know? Whereas opposed to the measles, mumps, rubella, and the varicella vaccine, which are live attenuated vaccines, the CDC says they're contraindicated. They're not contraindicated. It's a severe, really know what the fuck you're doing, caution warning. And I'll give it to you this way. If there was a wild strain of chickenpox going around, spreading across the country, a doctor would say, I'm not giving the vaccine, the anti-chickenpox vaccine, to a pregnant woman because it's contraindicated. Whereas a physician will actually sit down with the patient and say, this is what's happening. This is an attenuated vaccine. It's alive. It can cause problems. But it's not pathologic like the wild strain vaccine. Do you want this vaccine? Or are you going to run your chance being exposed to the live chickenpox virus while you're pregnant?
So if you say to someone, you suggest them a vaccine, and they say, no, I don't want it, are you just going to be laissez-faire at that point? Or are you going to try and convince them to take it?
I don't convince people. I tell people, this is the risk. This
so
is
you
benefit.
Give them the facts, and then you let them
this
do what
the
they
facts.
Will.
Do you ever shame them?
No, absolutely not. It's
their decision. I would be very tempted to shame them.
I can't shame them because it's
so
who am I to shame
them? What would you do if they said, well, what would you do? Would you answer them, or would you just say these are the facts?
No, no, I do share my personal experience with people. Okay. I do share. And I do tell them. I'm not prepared. This, whatever I said here on the internet, I say to my patients. You know, there's nothing different that happens in the room that happens with me speaking in a public forum.
Well, maybe Pickle Rick.
Pickle Rick. No, don't like Pickle Rick. You know, it's just, it's a matter
fried of... Chicken.
Fried chicken.
You present the facts, and I tell patients, go to something that ends in .edu or .gov, read what the doctors wrote, that other doctors read, read about the disease, see what happens. If you are psychologically prepared to watch your child go through it, do not give the vaccine to your child if you don't want to give it to them. If you are not prepared, give the vaccine to your child. Make the choice. Man up.
Mm-hmm.
But this goes back to something you said earlier about people being lazy.
Yeah.
They don't want to go to something that ends in .gov or .edu. They want to go to Facebook.com and see what their friend wrote.
WebMD.
Not my problem.
Because there's a print screen that says, from George Washington's blog, we determined that this was the case.
Well, part of the reason for that is a medical one, because it's Facebook and all the other social media sites have become gambling sites, and they give you a dopamine hit every time you look up something or view things on there. Mm-hmm. So literally their gambling addiction is interfering with their ability to manage their health.
That reminds me.
I don't have...
Look at our phone to the table. Look at
us. It's different, though.
Live stream on.
I don't have a Facebook account, so I can't tell my patients what Facebook opinions mean to me. I have my medical textbooks.
Right.
I have my legitimate sources to read from. I give them the information the best of my knowledge. It's up to them, man. I'm not their daddy.
I've had people try to argue politics with me based on something they read on Snapchat news sources.
Wait, there's nothing
like,
wrong.
So it's
I'm
not saying
Snapchat news sources.
I'm not saying that,
but you have to verify it. You have to get another source.
The way they present it is in that way. It's like, because they know their audience, and they're presenting it in a way to where they can gear it towards their audience to get more clicks on those stories.
Right.
Instead of trying to give you a factual source.
But like what Walden said
on his episode, like, you still need to have the knowledge to be able to look it up and judge for yourself from the facts based on that.
I've fallen for it too. I'll see something that I'm certain was true before I even looked at it. It'll confirmation bias me, and I'll be like, ooh, and I'm like, I get that little endorphin hit, and I'm like, mm-hmm. Yeah. Click, and I'm like, oh wait, let me look this up. Nope. Unclick. Fortunately, I've never been in a situation where I couldn't retract something, but I have retracted things. I've been part of the problem. So lately, I've been much more cautious about it. But it's crazy.
You know,
you can just have an emotional reaction to something you wanted to hear.
There's a reason I phrased my comment earlier about the IQ test for police officers. You know, is that real?
Yeah.
Because it's an interesting thing to me. It's an interesting thing to me if it is real, but I don't care enough to go research that.
Right.
So if I tell you about it, I give you that caveat. I don't know, but if it's true...
Right. Yeah, that's fair. You saw my reaction. Mm-hmm. I couldn't back you up. As much as I wanted to. I really didn't need you to trust you. But I mean...
I don't need you to back me up.
I know. The thing is... People can trust each other and care about each other and listen to each other and respect each other and still say, I'm going to double check.
Yeah.
You don't have to freak out on people if they get it wrong. And likewise, you just don't repeat it until you check for yourself.
Lose your physicians, people, okay?
The other thing...
We get things wrong, too.
Although maybe you should check your physician with another physician on Facebook.
Yeah.
The other thing is, you may be misinterpreting something. I may be misinterpreting something.
Right.
I read something. I missed that word that said not. Oops.
Yeah. Well, this is kind of like...
There were a lot of words there, people.
This is a topic that is actually...
There's at least seven.
...that we haven't really broached before, but we're actually broaching it now. What is the truth? You know? And I mean, the truth is diminishing returns as you approach the truth. You never arrive there. It's a journey.
But it goes back to the perception is reality.
Like we said on your show, what was that? The problem with safe rooms is life's a journey, and you're not going anywhere if you're safe. You know? Yeah, it's a journey. You know? You know, you're gonna hear stuff you don't want to hear. And guess what? The good news is sometimes it's not gonna be true. The bad news is sometimes it is. It's gonna hurt. It's gonna hurt to find that out, to go through that journey. That's life, man. Life is pain. So at least laugh. Laugh with me. Oh, that was beautiful. I love you guys. We're having another panel with this group. So the next question is, STEM is rooted in computers. There's a lot of talk about getting everybody on board that is we possibly can onto the science bandwagon, you know? Yeah, so don't worry. This isn't that bad. It's something new. So I've read this idea before in science fiction, so I haven't heard anyone articulate this, so I thought I'd throw it for you guys and see what you think. The idea is that if computers are really – everything's computers now, right? Every kind of science involves some kind of computation. Sometimes it's a little, sometimes it's a lot, but there's always at least a little bit. So if we really want to advance science, computers are an easy target. So we want, if computers are logic and language, why don't we look at advancing language? And what I mean by that is not just advancing computer language, but actually advancing the types of language we're exposed to. So I'm talking about a regimen of alphanumeric, talking left to right, right to left, up and down, at least one of each kind of language. Music, because music actually has a programmatic and a loop kind of structure within it. Hieroglyphs, because hieroglyphs is using a complete substitution kind of language, where you're using one thing to mean something completely different. Overlaying languages, where you have like the Oriental languages, typically where you have strokes and dots and such, and everything's going over each other, very much like a circuit board. Shouldn't we be teaching children one of each kind of language?
No.
So that they can turn around and you connect those things in the technology world.
No.
Until you can teach children communication, it doesn't matter if you teach them languages.
I think expose.
I mean,
them.
If we had infinite intelligence, wouldn't this be useful?
No,
but we don't.
Yeah, I think expose.
We don't have infinite school days.
We don't have infinite school days.
I think expose them to the most basic level possible, and then let them decide from there if they want to continue their time on it.
So you think we should expose people to these, but not make them learn it?
Because like when I was in school, you know, I learned what hieroglyphics are. I learned about a cuneiform. I took a music class, stuff like that, and I chose.
Right. But that's different.
I chose what I wanted to do.
Exposure and teaching
are
very different.
Is like.
Right.
I think you
can explain to someone what the Rosetta Stone is. Without actually making them memorize it.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
That's where I sit, because I feel like that a lot of times we're kind of living in a world where people are forced to kind of believe what they're taught is good, because growing up you think the adult's always right, you know, and instead just kind of
they are always right.
But instead, yeah, I mean, I'm always
kids are listening.
Right.
Shut up, man. No, I'm just kidding.
Give them
I hope kids are listening.
But now that's great.
Instead, give them that.
Shut off your computers,
them, like,
kids.
A little bit of leverage where they can say, "Hey, I like this. I want to move forward in this direction." You know?
Yeah. No, you're right. You're absolutely right. This is what we were talking about. So, you know, authority to have authority, you have to be a good steward. And I think this is one of the reasons I was talking about. I think that people are lying to polls these days because they don't think authority. In general, not all authorities, not all people, not all systems, but people are starting to feel more and more like authority is being abused, and that's why they lie to them, and because it's just always about you have to listen to us, and that's the lesson, not think for yourself, not expand.
You know, there's a thin line. When I was in residency, a nurse filed a complaint against me. She says I was very
authoritative. Authoritarian.
She said I was very authoritarian. I went to speak with the psychologist in the residency program and said, "This is what the nurse said about me. What do you think?" He says, no, you're authoritative. You're not authoritarian.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the problem is when someone who has authority becomes authoritarian, this is when the crossover happens.
Right.
There's a line between.
Well, you know what? The only way you know the difference between the two is research. Research, people. Life's a journey. That's how you know the truth.
But it's kind of hard when you're the person in the position because...
No, it's not your responsibility. It's their responsibility. If that person accuses you of being authoritarian, that was her responsibility to figure out the difference between the two and figure out which one you were. She didn't live up to it.
But that's where...
That's part of a society.
That's where language and communication comes in.
Right.
Going back to what you were saying, I'll give you an example. When Neil Armstrong was talking in front of a group of Japanese students...
Mm-hmm.
One of them asked, they were talking through an interpreter, and they asked, well, what was it like up there on the phone? And he said, well, it wasn't made out of cheese and there was no man on the moon, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
The interpreter said, there was no rabbit up there. There was no rabbit on the moon.
Go on. I mean, I watch a lot of Looney Tunes, but I'm not sure what you're talking about.
Exactly, exactly. This is why, that's what I'm getting to your point, is that if you translated it, it would have made no sense to them. But the interpreter understood that the Asian cultures and the South Pacific cultures, when they look at the moon, they see a rabbit on the moon, not a man on the moon. It's not made of cheese. So if they translated it, the kids would be like, "What? What are you talking about, old man?" You know?
Right, right.
So that's the difference between language and interpreting language and communicating. So until we teach people how to communicate with one another and understand, they have the metacognition to understand the thinking behind the thinking and to be able to communicate that with one another, it doesn't matter what you teach them if they can't translate it to another person. If they're stuck in their head, like as a mercurial little creature running around in their skull, it's not going to help them until they can reach out and expand and overlap into thoughts. And
do you think that that's a bigger problem than what I was saying about learning different types of languages, that actually communicating with people is the larger problem?
Okay. No, you could learn every language on the planet. If you don't know how to communicate with someone, people speaking English to English on the subway can't communicate with each other.
Yeah.
I've seen it every day on the subway going to work.
That happened inside my van on the cross-country trip. I started talking alligator talk. My wife's like, "What are you saying?" I'm like, "Oh, you're there. I'm going over there." You know, she's like, "I don't understand what you're saying."
my favorite language
before she did.
You know my favorite language?
What?
No. Jive.
are we going full airplane here?
Damn right. All
right. I picked the wrong podcast to stop sniffing glue.
Yes, you did. And don't call me Shirley.
All right. Well, okay. So that was interesting. I was expecting more detail on that, but that's all right. You still get a B+. All right. So
he actually put B+ down.
Yeah.
Actually,
dedication as a host.
On the subject of Jive, did anybody here watch The 100?
No.
It's a CW show about kids sent down to Earth 100 years after the planet gets blown to hell.
Oh, my wife was telling me about that, yeah.
Some of the people on Earth, you kind of pick it up. They're speaking a kind of slang Jive that has evolved over 100 years. And so they actually give subtitles for it.
Oh, but like Gaelic.
You can kind of hear what they're saying.
How cool is that?
We have completely gone off the rails, ladies.
a show for you to watch if you got the time. Check out The 100.
Okay, cool.
Go through the first season. If you don't want to watch it after that, stop. But
okay.
They're on like five now.
There's a great... speaking of translation, though, you've got to have an intelligent translator.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's a great...
And a worldly translator.
So there's this great picture of a street sign in Wales. And... because Wales has got that dual English and Welsh language thing, and the Welsh language makes Gaelic look normal.
Really.
And so it's a, and I don't even know if it's free. I've seen the picture. I don't know what the bottom says, but the story around it is that the top says, like, all lorries must turn left or something like that. All trucks must turn left.
Right.
The bottom, in theory, says the same thing in Welsh. The story around it is one about automated translation, and that the request was sent off, and the Welsh came back, and they put it on the sign.
An army of bureaucrats munched away.
The sign says, "Our translator is out until Tuesday. We'll get back to you."
Are you shitting me?
That's the story.
That's awesome.
You,
if you sell that sign, I will buy it.
You know, it's...
If you tell me the sign is, I'll steal it. I'll hop a plane tomorrow and get it.
I'll just make it.
Yeah, I know, right? But the idea being that you can't, you know, that's something like an automated translation. If you don't know what's coming back,
right?
How you need to, like, at least retranslate the translation so that you see, is it at least in the realm of reality?
So... former colleague of ours, Simon.
Yeah.
At one time, he had a little web page up that described Russian sayings and English translations and things that you shouldn't say.
Okay. Mm.
And I just one of them that has always stuck with me. It was translated, "I feel myself fine." And his note was, "Ask your American friends why this is wrong."
Sounds perfectly right.
Not for me. Worst office pranks. okay, cool. So this is going to be a weird one. It's going to probably take a little explanation for me, but I think it's worth it. What risk strategy makes a successful business person? So business for sure is about risk. Everybody here has got at least a little bit of experience with business. So what are we talking about? Where is the place that you focus on dealing with risk or managing risk? Is it taking risks? Is it positioning to avoid risk? Are you managing the consequences of failed risk? Or managing the expectations of risk, what people expect the risks to be, which is the most important one?
Okay, we read that. That's a lot of words.
I think taking risks. So is it actually taking the risk, sticking your money out there, putting your investments out there, sticking your neck out? Is that the important thing? Is it avoiding the risks completely? Dodging and weaving and trying to prevent a situation from happening? Is it managing the consequences of failed risk? In other words, knowing how to fail, roll, stand back up after you failed, the expectations?
There's a fifth for you.
Okay, great.
And that's the mitigating of the risk, which is different than avoiding the risk.
Okay, different.
It's allowing the risk to happen, but allowing the negative consequence of the risk to happen, but it's somebody else's problem. Mm-hmm. I mean, the prime example of risk mitigation is insurance.
Okay.
If something goes wrong, I don't pay for it. The insurance company does.
So the unnice name for that would be like passing the buck.
Not as much. I mean, it can be done above board. I would think of passing the buck as being more below board. But
right.
I would say it's taking the risk and mitigating against unexpected risk.
Okay.
Being in a position to say, yes, I took these risks, and I know what the risks are.
Right.
Maybe that's the sixth, is knowing what the risks are.
Knowing what the risks are.
And then you can make informed decisions about the rest. But, I mean, everybody mitigates against risk. It can happen. But if it does, here's how we're going to react. You don't avoid it. Otherwise, you never take the risk in the first place.
That's what I think. I feel like let's say you're starting up a business, you need to know there are going to be risks. Like, it's inevitable. Things are going to go wrong, and you're going to screw up. But what separates you is having that backup plan, that plan B, plan C, and D behind what you're doing to make sure that, like, even if the risk happens and things go south, you can still bounce back from it. Like, whether it be, like, just anything. Like, you're trying to write the prompts. Microsoft Word fails, and then Notepad fails. And then you go to Photoshop, and you type it up in there, But you still have those, like, backup plans, and you know that the potential for it to go wrong in those 2 hours before you get here
is
still there.
Wow, that's hardcore to do text in Photoshop. That's...
Yeah.
But listen, if...
Well, I've printed images in Word because I was desperate. Yep. Nothing else worked.
I've known people to make logos in Word. They weren't good logos, but they were still logos.
Right.
I think there's a difference I think the question lies, the principle lies where is it a standard business, something that's already modeled, or is something new that you're striving to go for? Because if it's something brand new, because technology always comes from, advancement always comes when you go to that edge of knowledge.
Right. This is a good point. Difference about your business experience in your business world and a lot of us. If technology is every 10 years, it looks completely different than it did 10 years ago. Your business is 80% the same.
Right.
Yeah,
so
from every
so
day.
The question is, how can I think the most from all the choices you gave is being prepared to recover from risks, because if you're doing new advancements that haven't been done before, how can you tell what the risks will be?
Managing the consequences of failed risks. Interesting. Okay, cool.
And I open that up to you guys because you talked about a risk, but it's like, how do we know what the risks are if it's a brand new field? I mean, if we're opening up a deli, we could read like 20,000 business plans of delis and what happened in a deli and, refrigeration and backup generators and stuff like that. But if it's brand spanking new, like, how the hell do we know what we're getting into?
That's when you have the backup plan to that entire plan, Like, you want to open up a deli. Something goes haywire. Like, let's say you open a deli, you're worried about, like, refrigeration and everything, but then the ceiling falls in.
Yeah.
You didn't expect for that to happen, but your backup plan to that deli business is what will save you,
Yeah.
I think there's also a successful business person can not have a plan. Yeah, they, I'm not saying they shouldn't have any plans. They've got A, B, C, and D.
Yeah.
The successful business plan person is the one that can figure out E when he needs it.
Yeah, and bounce back from it.
Instantly. Yeah, and just say, oh, well, I didn't have a plan for what the hell happened when the ceiling fell in, but you know what? We'll paint it black and we'll get down, you know, and just go.
Right.
You know, don't be afraid to take the risk.
Yep.
Yeah.
Look, we have an atrium.
Exactly.
You get
outdoor dining area.
And rats.
So it's spontaneity.
Yep.
Ability to
adaptability.
Adaptability.
Yeah. And yeah, and not overthinking it. Make a decision and move on.
I mean, this isn't for me. I'm asking for a friend.
Yeah, that's what we're talking about more of like the right brain approach, because it's like and a super analytical person, I feel like something like that happened with panic, you know?
It needs the creative side.
You need to be creative for that.
Absolutely.
Those are great answers. Thank you so much. You guys are really making this panel worthwhile. I hope everyone is enjoying it as much as I am, because otherwise I just have to quit, because I don't really get it. I don't really like, if this isn't good enough, I don't get it. So I'm having a good time. Have you guys ever been a celebrity?
I'm on Facebook right now.
Does that make you a celebrity? Is that all
fake? I gotta say, both of my Twitter followers think so.
Really?
Both of them, yeah.
Okay, good.
Okay. So I
just Photoshop and keep copying and pasting them over and over again.
I have one.
There's a term for that.
One incident I can relate.
Okay. Well, I have to give him credit. This is actually Lee's question. So thank you, Lee. That was a good question.
So a couple years back, well, first of all, a little background. As I mentioned in my first show with you,
mm-hmm.
I have spent ridiculous amounts of time online answering questions for people who have technical issues. And I've probably gotten a little recognition from that. I mean, Microsoft recognized me for the participation there, and I got a little bit known.
Nice.
But
you're kind of an MVP celebrity a little bit.
So a couple of years,
makes sense with what
a couple years back, I went to a conference, and I had pre-registered. I walk in the building. I go up to the table to pick up my badge. And I identify myself, and there's a guy behind the counter who looks up and goes, "You're Lee Wilbur?"
Nice.
Yeah? It was the weirdest thing to me, because somebody who I had absolutely no clue who he was recognized me.
Is that the point of celebrity, where someone you have just no reference point for whatsoever is like knows a meaningful amount of data about you?
Probably, yeah.
Okay. So, like, when the police want to arrest you and there's a warrant out and you got 3 stars, so to speak, that's kind of being a celebrity too. In a bad way, infamous, right?
If I get 15,000 likes, I'll turn myself in.
Yeah, nice.
But
I
mean, no.
I think you just wrote some good sci-fi right there.
The definition of
no, that happened.
So weird.
Oh, it did?
Yeah.
Okay.
The definition of celebrity is so weird. I mean, you can be a celebrity in the sense where you can just constantly shitpost on social media, and you can be infamous for it. And
yeah, yeah. There's some the top trolls.
Yeah, I mean, or you could be like...
A lot of them got kicked off in the past couple of years, but there was, especially like if you could rewind time, if you've just joined social media now, if you rewind time back 2 or 3 years, yeah, man, there were some people with millions of followers who were just trolls. They just started fights with people.
You could also be a celebrity exclusively on something like Instagram, have like a million followers and just do nothing but record from your webcam all day. It's like, it kind of just depends. What do you consider?
It helps if you have perky boobs. There's definitely some of that.
No, someone like Billie Eilish, who like got famous from just like literally mumbling into a microphone with her brother, and she made music, and now she's playing like concerts and like she's filling out Madison Square Garden and stuff.
Yeah.
Her debut top charts after her singles did. It's just.
This is one of the things we were talking about in our show, is that like, you know, sometimes being an artist in the digital world is really just a matter of just getting up one more time. Then you failed, and if you do something 10,000 times and your other 9,999 times are terrible and one of them is good, you got it. It's digital, man. You got a copy of it. Now you can share it with the world, and that's it.
I think just what to realize is that people, that no one cares about who you are or what you make, and I think being a celebrity is when people start to care.
Right.
You know? Like, you could say that, like, you could say, hey, I'm an actor, and like, great, I don't care. But they say, hey, I'm an actor, I'm going to be in the Avengers. And like, oh, wow. You know? I think that's kind of
right, right.
So once you hit a celebrity net worth list, then you're a celebrity. I think it's
your accolades. I think that's more what it is. If your accolade in someone's eyes is worth enough, mm-hmm. that's what could make you that, mm-hmm. make you one.
Interesting. Does anybody, you guys want to chime in on this? Or, I mean, I guess we're all celebrities now, right? Yeah, I actually have a good story. I don't know if I've told this story on the show before. So I actually got into a fight with like 30 people. It wasn't an actual fight. I was very angry. It had nothing to do with those people. But a situation was presented to me where I was able to help someone. And it was like, I don't know, 25, 30 guys picking on like 3 people. And they were kids, you know, and kids do crazy things. I'm not judging them, and they shouldn't judge me for stopping them if they do. You're gonna get it. But they were basically trying to beat these guys to a pulp. And I'm out in the parking lot, and I'm like, I was just in a really bad place mentally. I was very angry, and I just ran into the middle of it. I said, "You're gonna stop this right now!" And I screamed so loud, and I was so angry. I mean, I was just fury. I mean, I really could have killed someone back at that point. I mean, it would have been self-defense, or at least defense of another human life, so I'm not that worried about saying that, because I was in a bad place, and they were doing something terrible, so it's both things together, and they ran. I actually chased a bunch of people away, and I mean, I was bigger and older, so that was part of it, you know, I was bigger than the biggest guy there, but they panicked, and they ran, and I think a couple of them realized after, like most of them ran away, like, wait a minute, there's like 30 of us, and what of that guy? But that's not the point. I'm not trying to, like, elevate myself. The thing that was interesting about it is...
This was Banthas?
No, elevate away, please.
This was 5 years ago, and they were 8 years old.
No, I was a teenager. That's how long ago.
Were they Banthas? You know, they're easily scared, but they come back in greater numbers?
Yes. Yes, I think they were. And they had Mustangs. Banthas with Mustangs. So, the thing that's interesting about it is, like, weeks later, I was working at a job as a clerk, and two of the girls that knew those guys that I had stopped from getting beaten up, like, that's the guy that saved Bob or whatever his name was. And just for that 1 minute, I really and truly, I had no idea who they were until they were mumbling and giggling and like, they were so happy to see me. And then they told me what was going on. For that 1 minute, I was a celebrity. I was like, okay, mm-hmm. this is, now I get it, you know. I really, and the best part about it is I felt like I deserved it, you know. Mm-hmm. I really didn't. Because I was just angry. I would have just, you know, I could have had the same reaction if somebody gave me a parking ticket. But I was just that mad. But, you know, something came along and I was able to do some good with it, so.
Threesome?
I was the guy.
Story continue.
And the story ends there.
All right. Yeah,
so, officially. Officially the story ends there. So, let's see. Do you agree that men create their identity around their career? I think that's kind of pretty common psychology. I mean, I did introduce you all with your careers.
If I hadn't seen the rest of the question,
yeah,
I would say yes.
You'd say yes, right? Cool. Okay, good. You've fallen from my trap. Thank you for being honest.
If I hadn't seen the rest
of
the question.
See the rest of the question.
Okay, good. So
I don't actually have the question.
My answer is no.
That you don't?
Yeah, you do.
I think that, well, for me personally, that my career is built around my personality.
most men will say, I'm a construction worker, I'm, you know, if you ask.
Oh, you're talking about like how they identify? Like,
not like I collect stamps.
What's your worth?
I love the
moment
I
want.
You know, occasionally you'll get like, I love heavy metal, or, you know, like, I'm a huge sports fan or something like that, but usually it's, I do this.
Like when I was a teenager, and someone asked me, "What are you?" Like, I wouldn't refer to myself as a concession at a movie theater. You know, my life wasn't kind of revolving around that. It might be different.
Yeah, that's because you were a teenager.
Yeah, I think it's also different when you get into the career world, because I guess that's more like that now. But it's still tied to a passion.
I'll tell you one thing. Like, as a person who's done the career thing and done lots of the clerk mm-hmm. job thing too, you know, the thing about the career thing is, because you get a salary, you're expected to solve the problems within a timely fashion
eventually, no matter what.
Oh, yeah.
You never stop thinking about your job. Mm-hmm. You might stop yourself from thinking about a job and go on a vacation, but when you come back from vacation, you're back to thinking about it again. So when you go home or you're commuting, doesn't mean you're not thinking
about it. I've thought about programming errors constantly, and I've, like, fixed it in my dreams before, too.
Right, right. But. Yeah, yeah. And that's how that – but most white-collar jobs are like that. There are some where you go home. Yeah. But even then, you don't really stop thinking about
it. Well, like, yeah, if your boss is an ass, you know, and, like, then you go home, you're still – that's what could be.
Yeah, yeah. There's so many puzzles. It's infinite puzzles.
Do the rest of it.
He's excited about this, I can tell. So this is why I wanted to give you guys a sheet so you can read them ahead of time.
Can you read the first part of the question again?
Do you agree that men create their identity around their career?
See, I would say that men – tend to identify people by their career.
For sure, yes.
Society. Not necessarily, I mean, gender doesn't matter. Thinking about it right or wrong, I'm interested in what anybody does, mm-hmm. male or female, I don't care. I meet somebody, I start talking to them.
Did you read the question?
No.
Okay, very good. Very good answer. I like your, you're not cheating, you swear. That's a great answer. Wait to hear where this goes. So.
Answer to the question. The question was, do men build their career?
Do women
build their career?
But this is like,
who cares about women?
This is the question of do men do this? Right. So do women do that? Do they identify themselves around their careers? Okay.
Because I think this is where I said if I hadn't seen the rest, because I think you really need to restate that question. Then, if you're going to bring them both in, I don't think it is. To your point, I don't think it is a man and woman thing.
I've known plenty of women who just, like, they can't wait to get out of their white-collar job, and they're done. I've also known plenty of women who are damn proud of what they do, and that's who they are.
Right. I can think
of a lawyer right now who is definitely a lawyer now, and she will always be a lawyer. And on the other hand, I can also think of a school teacher who is a school teacher until 3:30, and then they're not a school teacher anymore until the next Monday,
But is that a man-woman difference, or is that just a... current societal reality is significantly higher number of men are that professional than women. Not because they're not capable or anything else, just look at the numbers. You know, the numbers
not
are
even,
the numbers
not even
going
to answer it. I don't even
chicken
know.
Shit.
Yeah.
I think it's people that have careers.
I just figure out the crap that I don't know, and I ask you guys.
I think it's people that have careers build their identity around the career.
Right.
I don't think there's a male and female issue there.
Interesting. Okay.
I think a professional doctor sees themselves as a professional doctor. A professional lawyer sees themselves. There aren't really amateur doctors and amateur lawyers, but.
Sorry about that.
It's not a hobby. Let's put it that way. I mean,
might as well be.
I may diddle with a guitar on a Saturday, but I'm not going to call myself a musician. You know, I don't think that people are like, you know, diddling with.
Are you confessing to diddling your guitar?
No, they're diddling.
But
that's because I think the complexity of the puzzles, for sure. But also, I think there's a social aspect, too. I see a difference. I see most men that work, separating white-collar and blue-collar jobs, because blue-collars tend to be more typically hourly, or at least some of the people in the blue-collar environment are hourly, and they're... But I don't know. I mean, I've seen some blue-collar jobs that are also permanent salary jobs, where they identify as their job.
I would also think it depends what you're passionate about.
Right.
You know, if you really love what you do, then you're more inclined to identify with that and identify yourself that way.
Right.
Well, I was also just thinking, like, yes, when I was like about my answer, when I said no. Also, I completely forgot that yesterday, instead of me going home when I had the opportunity, I was working here till 4 a.m. on stuff.
Right.
So I guess that also factors into it.
And when I first started in technology, I'd go home.
There's always more to do.
And my network, I wanted to rival my network at work.
Right.
You know, I've got other things I'm doing now that I don't have the time to make it rival the network I have at work. But then again...
Right.
But I think there's a difference between wanting to...
I don't even need to answer all the questions. You guys are just implying them, so...
Yeah, I think there's a difference between wanting to do something to its maximum potential and defining one's personality through their job function. I think people who define their personality through job function possibly could have some sort of deficit in their life, something they're searching for to fulfill themselves because they don't find it within themselves. They're not looking interior at the person who they are to grow and expand, to be part of the current, to look in. They're just looking for something to build upon themselves, something external and extrinsic.
I think you're overanalyzing. I think this is a scenario where first response is right response. And let's just come back up to the top of the page. Lee, admin, Rerez, doctor, Walden, business owner. I'll give you credit. You, musician, was the first one listed there. But
you're
also significantly younger. So I think that, you know,
he's really good.
None of us went, hey, introduce me as a father, or introduce me as a tennis player, or introduce me as a fisherman. It was our career.
So.
Yeah, but when I go to parties and people don't know me, they say, what do you do?
Yeah.
I tell them I'm an aspiring writer. I don't tell them I'm a musician.
Guys. Okay.
Because I don't find myself as a physician.
Yeah, I know.
I'm just on
average, if that room had 100 people in it.
I'll skip the last question.
How many of them would say I'm a whatever they do for a living?
That's up to them. I'm talking about myself personally.
But the question was generically about men in general, societal men.
Right.
If you want to focus on the question directly, yes. My thing is that if someone has to use their profession to define who they are, I'm just saying it possibly could be a lack of what's, because they're searching for something, that they're lacking something on the inside.
Right.
That I was trying to externally try to bring in to expand on
this. So I have a weird situation where I'm doing this right now, and this is not what I was doing before. I completely changed careers,
yeah,
like midstream, you know, and so like it was pretty jarring. And you know, I mean, I always hated telling people that I was an admin because I'm like, I'm so much more than this. This sucks. I want to talk about motorcycles or my family or psychology or, you know, and it just bothered me that I was stuck with this title. This is the thing that I slug away at all day.
Be honest. You stopped telling people you're an admin for the same reason the rest of us stopped telling people we're in computers, because no, we cannot fix your phone.
Yeah. That has happened too, yes.
I've actually gotten free tea because I went to a tea shop whose AV receiver in the back was broken. And by broken, I mean they didn't compare their phone through Bluetooth. And I just went out back, I pressed two buttons, and then I paired my phone. I'm like, oh, you got music. I'm like, you get free tea. Here, take this. And I'm like, okay.
Nice. Okay.
For like 2 minutes of work.
I once fixed the Huntington Post Office door with a screwdriver.
Did they give you free mail?
No, I'm kind of annoyed with that.
So I'm going to alter this question a little bit. Now keep in mind, I was writing these questions. You know,
I actually showed them.
The end of the list is the end of the question, so I was literally writing these questions as I'm running out the door. But I'm going to actually change it a little based on your reactions. So I want to say, do oaths change or grow career identity?
Oaths to your career?
Yeah, like a person takes an oath when they join the military. A person takes an oath when they work for the post office. The doctor takes an oath. I remember thinking specifically of you mentioning that you have your own oath on top.
Yeah, he has his own take on his oath. I think that doesn't...
That's amazing. And actually, so the question is, how do oaths affect careers? You know, do they solidify that career as your identity? Or
I think it just affects your ethics. Yeah. I don't think it affects your career.
It doesn't affect your identity.
Well, I mean, your ethics.
Your career depends.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
if you're a doctor, hereby swear to do only evil.
I think almost by definition, if it's a sincere oath,
it has to
affect it. I mean, it, otherwise you're not holding to the oath.
Interesting. Okay. I'm trying to get to the core of this. It's interesting to me that I can intro people. I'm not picking on you guys. You guys actually got this question, so you get to deal with it. But I mean, I introduce everybody by what they do. You know, I talk about what they do, and I give them a little bit, and then I let them go.
Okay, but so let me turn.
But no one questions
let me
that.
Turn that question around for you. for the female guests you have, did you do the same?
Of course.
So,
right.
There's your answer.
Right. Well, they have the opportunity, and I did the
as
same.
As do we all.
Right, but I'm not. That's, you know,
It could be a leftover from a male-dominated society. This might change. We may stop identifying ourselves as our careers if we become more feminine. If we become more, you know, women become
why,
more involved.
But okay, why
and I'm
not?
I'm wondering
why not
if that's
say,
a good thing.
I mean. Yeah, that's said almost as though you were saying it.
Right, and then the question is now,
the exact
now, if
opposite is equally
if alts enhance identity, and we become more feminine, and people start identifying with their careers, doesn't that move us away from oaths, and isn't that destructive?
Yeah, I'm not following what you're.
Yeah.
Yeah, you don't see that femininity
you're
is. Is
you know, I think one of the problems is that.
I'm not saying this is happening. I'm just saying that this. These things seem like they could connect to each other to me.
Yeah, I think the problem is that we always try to put people into little boxes,
mm-hmm.
and put these little boxes and shelves in a very organized manner, and it doesn't work that way.
I agree.
You know,
I completely agree.
We're just
I was just saying I hated that, right? So,
yeah.
Okay.
So I think that we just can't standardize this.
Great, okay. I like your answers. I like your uppityness, and you're like, fuck that, yeah, put me in a box. You know, I feel like Rage Against the Machine should play or something here.
Wow.
Tom Morello was here. That'd be a different conversation. I can guarantee you that.
And they're very sorry about Limp Bizkit. So, all right, last question. I'm going to skip the very, very last question. One last question, and then we'll call it a night. What is the worst social media gaffe that you've ever witnessed?
Like worse in a good
the
way or
worst, like the absolute like total disaster. They never
Where
should have said that.
Like
they never should have done that.
Yeah. Worst in a good way. What exactly does
worst
that
is something that you get entertainment out of?
That's,
yeah,
because,
yeah,
that's
yeah,
because
yeah.
Steve is notorious.
Not necessarily in an objectively bad sense, but a sense where you're like, how did this happen kind of thing.
Well, I think the worst one is recently by I heard about the nurse who was fired. Because she saw a kid with measles, and the kid was transferred to the ICU in the hospital,
right.
And she still is, from what I understand, an anti-vaxxer, and she said, you know, this is a horrible disease, but I still wouldn't vaccinate my child, and she was actually thinking of, this is from what I heard, I didn't read up on this, I didn't go to the library, I didn't research this,
that's okay.
But from what I hear, that she wanted to take a swab from this measles child to actually inoculate her child at home. That's what I heard, you know. But she put this on Facebook, and she lost her job. Now,
wow, that's pretty bad.
Yeah, but should she lose her job? Because she had a passing thought and she put it out in media. Why should we lose our jobs for it?
That's a good question.
If she didn't
unban
privacy settings, then...
Huh?
What's the worst gaffe you've ever seen?
A friend of mine had posted something about his court date.
Mm-hmm.
And he was in some way... I don't remember the exact details, but he was in some way trashing the judge and the whole process. And I'm like, dude... You should take that down because he was going to have to go back to court and potentially be sentenced for something. It's like, not a wise move.
Yeah, you should say that shit after
you... Poking the bear, man.
After your sentence is passed, then you can make the
yeah.
comment.
Yeah.
You know,
beforehand, no. Judges can look on Facebook. They can look people up.
No, it's not
especially,
the real world.
Especially this person who has a rather large number of friends and talks to just about anyone he can talk to.
Wow.
Uh-huh.
Well,
that's pretty bad. That's pretty bad. You guys want to chime in? Can you think of anything in particular?
I mean, the almost the reverse.
I mean, it could be funniest, too.
Yeah,
like,
no,
most
I'm almost on the other side of like, thinking that social media is... Who cares what you do on social media? It's social media. It's fun. It's not supposed to be career altering. It's
mm-hmm.
A social media gaffe should be like saying, oh, fuck, oh well, move on. You know, the idea that it matters is the gaffe.
Thank you very much. Touche.
I was thinking about Shia LaBeouf in the past decade. That's the first thing that came to mind.
Shia LaBeouf.
He's an actor. He kind of started off as
the
like an actor for childhood TV shows, and went to Transformers. And after that, he kind of just went super political, and then just went on a downward spiral. The most notable event that I could think of, because he's in the movie soon. That's why it was on my mind.
Yeah, you mentioned him in the
show. But he did this thing where he basically took this is when Trump was first elected. he made a flag. It was white with black text.
I remember this.
It says, "He will not divide us." And he hung up the flag and he live streamed it, and now it's his form of protest.
Good.
Go to 4chan on the politically incorrect threads. They actually were able to look at the flag. They looked at it from the time of day in the live stream, from the flight paths, from the sun direction, everything, and they were able to track down the flag and take it down.
The local kinds of birds.
Local kinds of birds, too. Right. And they took down the flag. It was just like their way of protesting back.
It became a game of capture the flag, and they went through three iterations.
No, four.
Four iterations of capture the flag.
Then there's another time where they put it on top of a massive building with heightened security. And on top of the building with heightened security, people still zip-lined in to get the flag and move it. And there's another situation where it was in a cabin in the middle of the woods, and people could just hear renovations happening. And then from the renovations, they went and they saw it. It's like, hey, I live right over here. And they got the flag. Now the word exists right now. I don't know if it's still streaming. Is in a room against a white wall in a house. They found the house. They've based on the lighting, like I said, they know where it exists, but no one has gone inside yet.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
I wonder if there's alligators in there. I might.
That's why when he said worst is and worst in a good way, that made me laugh hysterically.
That's pretty funny and also awful at the same time.
Yeah. So no, it is awful, but like it started off with just kind of like minor back and
but
forth.
But you know what? I kind of like.
Well,
I mean,
social media.
To me,
yeah, now that's just
to me that's like social media. This is the thing that's great about it. If we just don't take it seriously, we could just have giant games
that
capture the flag.
Thank you. Look, like right now, like earlier, you said I felt like killing those people, which is a very normal human reaction to feel like killing another human being at one point in your life.
Right.
You should not be held accountable and say, oh, shit, no, he has psychopathic tendencies, he wanted to murder someone.
Yeah.
You know, it's
well,
like,
they were basically beating people to death in front of me, you know, and with very unfair odds.
That's your perspective.
Right.
But, you know, someone could take your words out of context, and I don't think social media should
I chose that example very carefully.
Yeah.
But why should I have to, right?
You shouldn't have to.
But if
someone says that I had a passing thought of doing this, it shouldn't have any bearing on their career.
Right. So I think you guys are saying what I wanted to say.
To that end, and I know you're trying to wind down, so I probably shouldn't say this.
Go for it.
But the question then is, should employers and the government be allowed to view otherwise private posts on Facebook?
Yes, but
yes.
I don't think you should
just
be able to act on it.
Mind your fucking business.
No, well, the key point is,
I don't think
they
should be legally allowed to act on it.
Yes. I mean, like, you've put on your privacy settings that say it's not a public post, and they're going in and saying, okay, we want to see the page before we hire you.
Unless it's a clear and present danger, I think that's the normal standard for if there's a physical threat to life or health. No,
but
they shouldn't be able to do anything about it.
But how do you define that?
Well, that's you know, like, that's the... That's a long process, but it's generally, do they have the ability to do harm to people? Are they planning to do harm? And so in other words, do they have intent? Are they ready? And do they have the actual ability? If the answer to both is yes, then yeah, fire their ass if they're going to do something bad.
So you think
if their role is to let them do something bad. But if those conditions aren't met, no.
So
just,
you think
I want to kill those guys isn't me.
But that wasn't his question.
No.
No.
So you're assuming, I think, that the post is made public and that anyone can stumble across that person and say, oh, look, he just said this.
Right. That's what I'm assuming.
What I'm saying is, I've marked this to be only accessible to my friends.
Oh, that's bonkers. Yeah, no, you shouldn't be able to. If you set privacy settings, then they've essentially hacked your privacy
and
settings.
And yet there are many companies, as I've heard, who are requiring you to give in your Facebook account and password so they can review the kind of person
password?
You are with your friends.
Password?
Yeah. So they can check what you've posted.
Wow. And this is exactly why I have exactly the same personality in private and in public.
Password?
What you see is what you get.
This is why my privacy settings are set to all on public.
Right, exactly, because there's absolutely no point. But you know what? That's not right. It shouldn't have to be like that. That's wrong.
Well, I do not post.
First of all, I think one of the things that we were all saying is forgiveness is critical.
Mm-hmm.
You need to be able to forgive people, because sometimes people just talk, and sometimes it's just talk, and you say it. It's talk therapy. This is basic psychology. Talk therapy is basic psychology. You say it, you feel better, you're done. That's how humans work. If you don't know that, you're an alien. Back to those aliens again. But, you know, yeah. But, yeah, if you have privacy settings and you have a contract with an outside organization and they agree to privacy, and it's a violation of your privacy, I don't think they should be allowed to see that.
I don't think anyone should give out their passwords for anything.
Oh, no, they definitely shouldn't.
They could just log on and become your friend and see what you've got to say, but not your password.
But that's a problem with biometrics, right? You can't unremember your biometrics, but you can unremember your password. I'm pretty sure you can train yourself to forget a password if you try real hard.
You can poke your eyes out and burn off your fingers.
That's what I told him the other day. I file my fingerprints every 2 weeks. So.
All right, guys. I think everyone here is dying, and... it's been a lot of fun. This has definitely been a wonderful panel. Thank you guys for showing up. Particularly thank you for Walden last minute. I appreciate it. You know, I was
happy to.
And I'm glad to have you here, and you filled it out perfectly. Guys, thanks so much. Thanks for coming to the Technocrat Live and watching us. And we'll see you next week. I'm going to be on Tell Something About the Ocean. And then next week's going to be a mashup because it's 4th of July, people. Go watch some fireworks.
Woo!
And the following week is going to be Matt and Mike from their podcast. So good night. See you in a couple weeks.
Woo! Thank you for tuning in.
Thank you so much.